Airborne Division was arraigned today on military charges in the rape of a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and killing of her family, charges that could bring the death penalty. Sergeant Paul Cortez is accused of plotting in March to rape and kill the teenager in a village about 20 miles south of Baghdad. You're listening to Air America Radio News and the Air America Radio Network. I'm Wayne Gill.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice. Authentic flavored Mahatma and Carolina Rice mixes are delicious and ready in just 20 minutes. Try some today. Look for Mahatma or Carolina Rice mixes at your local grocer.
With energy costs on the rise and cooler weather around the corner, isn't it time to replace your home's windows? Custom replacement windows from Sears are low maintenance, tilt-in easy for cleaning, and may also help reduce your energy costs. Add beauty to your home with custom replacement windows from Sears. Just call 1-800-349-2532 for a free in-home consultation. Call now and ask about our special financing terms. You can count on Sears for the quality materials and installation you have come to expect for over 100 years, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Call now for your free in-home consultation. Offer ends 12/30/06. Subject to applicant credit worthiness. License number available on request. Not available in all areas. See associate or ask your consultant for written limited warranty details. If it's time to replace your windows, call Sears now. 1-800-349-2532. Ask about our special financing terms. That's 1-800-349-2532.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-700-6439. That's 1-800-700-6439. 1-800-700-6439.
Homeowners, the Mortgage Center wants to help you today by offering you a choice when it comes to refinancing. At the Mortgage Center, you'll always have three banks competing for your business.
It's true. I made one phone call and was approved and instantly received three great offers to refinance my home.
Homeowners, cash in today. Get money for debt consolidation or home improvement. The Mortgage Center can and will help you, so call them right now.
I was dangerously in debt. My credit was in the low 500s, but with just one phone call, I was approved for their life-changing offers. And now I'm on my way to being debt-free.
Owe more than $75,000 on your home? Well, the Mortgage Center has the lowest rates in the industry. Poor credit? Not a problem. Call our hotline today to receive three free quotes.
It's that easy. The Mortgage Center helped me. They can help you, too.
Let the Mortgage Center help you. Call our 24-hour toll-free hotline now and have three banks competing for your business. Call 1-800-980-3175. That's 1-800-980-3175. 1-800-980-3175.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. The USO receives no government funding and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people. To find out more, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, man, there's a talk about cross currents. After years of denial, this is from the Washington Post, Dan Egan writing in the Washington Post today. After years of denial, the CIA has formally acknowledged the existence of two classified documents governing aggressive interrogation. What many of us and what the world, I would say, would call torture. by the way, governing aggressive interrogation and detention policies. Again, what I would say is an absolute violation of the U.S. Constitution. What the Bush administration would simply say is the new America. Let's go back to the article by Dan Egan here. After years of denial, the CIA has formally acknowledged the existence of two classified documents governing aggressive interrogation and detention policies for terrorism suspects, according to the ACLU. But CIA lawyers say the documents, memos from President Bush and the Justice Department, are still so sensitive that no portion can be released to the public. This may be the fingerprints of George W. Bush on the war crime paper, as it were. I mean, this could be what tracks back to Bush being in the docket that Slobodan Milosevic was in. Frankly, that's pretty unlikely because the United States has the ability to veto anybody ending up there, and we didn't sign that treaty to participate. But nonetheless, this is it. The ACLU describes the first document as a directive signed by Bush governing CIA interrogation methods or allowing the agency to set up detention facilities outside the United States. McPherson described it as a memorandum. In September, Bush confirmed the existence of secret CIA prisons and transferred 14 remaining terrorism suspects from them to Guantanamo Bay. The second document is an August 2002 legal memo from the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel to the CIA General Counsel. The ACLU describes it as, quote, specifying interrogation methods that the CIA may use against top al-Qaeda members, end quote. Amrit Singh, one of the ACLU's attorneys in the case, said the disclosures may make it easier for the group to argue in favor of releasing the documents. He said, for more than 3 years, they've refused to even confirm or deny the existence of these records. The fact that they're now choosing to do so confirms that their position was unjustified from the start. Now we can begin to actually litigate the release of these documents. So, good on you. It's the ACLU. And then to add to this, Pat Leahy, the senator from Vermont, the Democrat from Vermont, who will take over in all probability as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in January when the Democrats take control of the Senate, assuming that Joe Lieberman doesn't decide he's going to become a Republican. Pat Leahy has said that he is going to, well, here's the story just straight up. This is from UPI, United Press International. The California Daily Journal reports that Leahy is drafting a bill to undo portions of the new law, that would be the Military Commissions Act, in an effort to give habeas corpus rights to enemy combatants. A spokeswoman for Leahy told the newspaper the bill would be intended to repeal portions of the law that prevent some detainees from pursuing federal court challenges to the government's authority to hold them indefinitely. Spokeswoman Tracy Schmaler told the newspaper the goal is to try and do something to reverse the damage. However, Scott Selman, the director of the Center for Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University School of Law, said that any attempt to amend the law would set up a partisan showdown in Congress and possibly a presidential veto. George Bush does not want to give up his right under this law to ignore the United States Constitution. Civil rights attorneys filed a constitutional challenge to the act, but, you know, it's going to take a while for that thing to make it up through the Supreme Court. So that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And we'll see how that shakes out. In the meantime, with regard to our, you know, this just ongoing debacle with our privatized healthcare system, oddly enough, some of the best reporting on this has been done by the Wall Street Journal over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, they're the ones who outed William McGuire for the second largest health insurance company in the country, the CEO, for taking a $1.78 billion compensation package for last year, for 1 year. They're the ones who did the series, the Wall Street Journal, 3 years ago about rationing health care in the United States and how we do have rationing. And through our private health care system, I mean, some very good reporting, actually, even though their editorial page is essentially, in my opinion, psychotic on most days of the week. The Wall Street Journal is actually a good example of how you can separate editorial from reporting and actually do good reporting and still be editorially biased. Fox News, on the other hand, this memo that Huffington Post released today, saying essentially that they want to promote the meme, they want to get this meme out, this idea, this thought virus out, to all of their viewers, that the terrorists, the insurgents, are dancing in the streets because the Democrats were elected. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, this article on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal by Barbara Martinez. Some 55 million poor and disabled Americans, she points out, are covered by Medicaid. This is a $300 billion package. And, of course, where there's money, there are vultures. I'm not quoting Barbara Martinez. That's my editorial comment. Here's what she says. She says it's also a lucrative business for some private companies that act as middlemen between the government and patients. State governments increasingly outsource the job. That's paying the bills when a Medicaid patient goes to the doctor. Outsource the job to private contractors. More than one in three Medicaid beneficiaries now receive care through a private insurer. The potential gains are big. For example, she talks about a private equity fund in which George Soros took a 70% stake. It's called WellCare Health Plans, Inc. The fund finished cashing out the stake this August, bringing in a total of $870 million for an investment that originally cost $220 million. So over a four-year period, they invest $220 million, they get back $870 million. Now, where does that $650 million profit come from? You and me. It comes out of our tax dollars. WellCare's stock price, notes the Wall Street Journal, has tripled since it began trading in July of 2004, bringing the value of stock and options held by its chief executive, Todd S. Farah, to $77 million. Do we really want to be paying $77 million to some guy to act as a leech between us and Medicaid patients? I certainly don't. With the growth, notes the Wall Street Journal, has come some criticism from some doctors and patients who accuse Medicaid HMOs of scrimping on care. Even as they restrict medical tests and use of prescription drugs, the companies spend the money they get from states on items that don't have an obvious connection to patients. Centene has funded a multi-million dollar arts center in St. Louis and put its name on stadiums in Montana and Missouri. Yes, that's your healthcare tax dollars at work. The HMOs are also big donors to political campaigns. Gee, what a surprise. Centene chief executive Michael Niedorf earned $1.85 million in salary and bonus last year. I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal. And as of the end of last year, held restricted stock valued at $26 million. The company also recorded $135,547 last year in compensation for Mr. Niedorf, representing the value of personal trips he took on the corporate jet. A Bombardier Challenger that features an espresso machine on board, according to the lease agreement. Once again, your health dollars at work, your tax dollars at work. And then they talk about how this very company that this guy is running, this guy who's sitting on $26 million worth of stock and got a $1.85 million paycheck with our dollars, is basically sticking it to Melissa Bishop, this 39-year-old patient who needed radiation for cancer on her pancreas. She calls Centene, her Medicaid HMO. She says she tried three facilities suggested by the company, but none of them were part of Centene's plan. She says, I was going round and round. I was getting so aggravated. After she got an appointment at a fourth place, an administrator there told her it didn't accept her plan either. I mean, this is an absolute mess. People are dying because of this, but hey, Mr. Niedorf is making $1.85 million this year. There's money to be made! Jerry Flanagan, healthcare policy director of a California group, says what's good for shareholders is bad for patients. What's really happening is we're giving less money for far, far fewer services. Yeah. Ruben Jose Kingshaw Jr. says, no. Private companies deliver a good quality product at a reasonable price. He, however, owns shares and options valued at an additional $1.5 million. Yeah. 16 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought. Change the air you breathe. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200.
Attention college graduates, did you know that with one simple call to College Loan Corporation, you can cut your student loan payments by almost 50%, lock in one low rate, and start earning up to a $2,000 cash rebate? That's right. College Loan Corporation is a nationwide leading student loan provider, offering 24/7 personalized service and innovative solutions for your specific situation. We've helped over 600,000 people like you. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE today. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Like Alice's trip into Wonderland, let's go inside George W.'s head for a moment. Being Bush must be a wonderful existential experience. Fantasy is reality, lies are truth, and history is what you say it is. Take the White House's recent surreal wrestling match with Bush's own tongue. For months leading up to the congressional elections, George had used the phrase "stay the course," both to define his war strategy in Iraq and to impale critics, implying that they did not have the moral fortitude to do the job. But whoa, as the war news grew ever more grim and the public turned against Bush's policy, "stay the course" was not a politically helpful metaphor, so it was jettisoned. But then things turned really barmy in the wonderland of Bush world. Rather than just drop the phrase, White House press flack Tony Snow insisted that Bush had, quote, never said it. Then, bizarrely, Bush himself denied his own tongue. Listen, he barked to ABC News, we've never been stay the course. But people had heard him say it. Okay, Snow finally confessed, we've now done a Google search of George's speeches and, quote, to be fair, the president did say stay the course 8 times. So big deal, Snow said. It just proves that Bush barely used the phrase. Only it was a big deal, since the Mad Hatters of Bush world were still lying about it. After Snow's correction, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann ran video clips of George saying, stay the course, not 8 times, but 29. Moreover, the White House's own record of press releases contains 160 uses of stay the course. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Bush wrestled with his tongue, and the tongue won. This would merely be comically embarrassing for the White House, except that it shows that Bush's capacity for self-delusion and public deception knows no bounds.
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing? On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions, and big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder, millions of jobs are being exported, and now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout, America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
3 chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't too bewitched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denounced their man. These patriots rolled up their sleeves and took matters in hand.
Let's meet all the Dixie Chicks. We're two nice dudes, rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin. Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again.
And welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. That from Jim Turr, by the way. He is brilliant. Over at BlueCanyonSatire.com and BlueCanyonProductions.com. Just remarkable. Great stuff. Great stuff. What we're seeing, in back to this discussion of health care, this goes beyond health care. This goes way beyond health care. I mean, here we have hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, $300 billion a year is how much we're pouring into Medicaid. And about a third of it has hundreds of millions of dollars of it being sucked off by private for-profit corporations. In fact, the Wall Street Journal notes, when states run their own Medicaid programs, they spend an average of 4-6% on administration costs. The rest, 94-96%, goes to pay for medical care. However, when Medicaid HMOs take over, in other words, when they outsource this stuff, as many states are doing, about a third of them now, as Medicaid HMOs, at Medicaid HMOs, only 80 to 85% of premium dollars generally go for medical costs. The rest covers other costs, including executive compensation, entertainment, and political contributions, or becomes profit for shareholders. Well, of course, that's what happens when you privatize anything. It becomes more expensive because you have to pay those CEOs millions of dollars. Well, you don't have to pay them, but they're going to take it. You have to pay dividends to the shareholders. There's, you know, it's a for-profit corporation. You have a fiduciary responsibility to them. You have to pay for the marketing costs. You have to pay for the corporate headquarters. You got, instead of having a bunch of boring government administrators, a bunch of boring bureaucrats who are making a boring government salary with a decent pension, administering the program so that your Medicare program runs at an overhead cost of 4%. Instead of that, you get folks in India doing the work for you know, $2 an hour, and you get CEOs in New York City taking $1.5 million a year salaries. Or in the case of Todd S. Ferris, $77 million in his executive compensation, stock and options. $77 million! In Illinois, the state and the Justice Department asserted in a lawsuit that America Group, this from the Wall Street Journal again, spent only $131 million in medical care from 2000 to 2004, despite taking in $243 million from the state. Now get this. The state of Illinois pays this company $243 million to provide medical services, and only $131 million of that, about half, makes its way to the people. What's wrong with this picture? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with this picture. This is the rise of something essentially and fundamentally un-American. It has happened before. In the United States, we keep going through these cycles of corporatism and what you could refer to as populism or progressivism. We had the progressive cycle from 1776, arguably until around 1830. Then we got into the corporatist cycle from the 1830s with the death of the implosion of the Federalist Party and the death of the Whig Party and at that point in time, frankly, the corruption of the Democratic Party up until the time of the Civil War. Then we went into a populist era from the Civil War until the 1870s, until Reconstruction, where the power went back to the people. And then the corporations rose up in the late 1870s, early 1880s. And particularly the railroad corporations, but then oil and steel and finance, J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, John Rockefeller, the whole bunch of them. And from the 1880s until 1901, you had a corporate rule in the United States. And from 1901, when Teddy Roosevelt became president, the Republican, but he was a progressive, the trust buster. He started breaking down these big corporations and enforcing the Sherman Act from 1901 until arguably the end of the Woodrow Wilson administration, the end of World War I, which is, what, 1920-something, 1921, I think, was when Wilson left office. From 1901 till 1921, it went back to the people. Then from 1921 to 1932, it went back to the corporations. Corporations took charge again, and they brought us the Republican Great Depression. And then we, the people, took charge in 1932 with Franklin Roosevelt coming in and fundamentally took power back from the corporations. And we held it, we, the people, through Democratic and Republican administrations until 1980, when with Reagan coming in, the power went back to the corporations. And so now for the last 26 years, we've been living in under corporate rule. And we keep going back and forth in these cycles. And the question in my mind is whether the election of 06 is either going to begin the process or is setting up the election of 08, which may complete the process of happening in the United States what happened in 1932 and what happened in 1901 and what happened in 1856, or arguably 1860, and what happened in 1776, which is the people taking back the power. We'll hear from Franklin Roosevelt on this right after the break and get to your calls as well, 866-440-8466, our phone number, TomHartmann.com for a live chat room, 27 minutes past the hour.
Kids who load up on junk food run a high risk of obesity, and as adults, type 2 diabetes.
Bill is a research scientist at GSK.
Too many kids today don't eat right or get enough exercise. We support a program that encourages schools to replace junk foods with healthier food choices to help prevent type 2 diabetes where we can. The fact is, GSK makes several diabetes medicines, but how great would it be if these kids never had to take them?
GSK, finding a way forward, one healthy child at a time.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and my show on Headline News Prime has disturbing pictures you have to see to believe. Radical Islamic propaganda, kids being brainwashed, suicide bombers as heroes, it's scary stuff. And it's time for all of us to realize what's really going on. Radical Islam's Lessons in Hate. Join me, Glenn Beck, for a special hour. Expose the extremist agenda. Headline News Prime, tonight, 7 and 9 Eastern.
Maybe you see people listening to their iPods, white earbuds dangling from their ears, and maybe you don't have an iPod yet because you don't see yourself as that type of person. So are you the type that has a CD player or a six-disc changer in your car? To heck with that. Don't limit yourself. Enjoy your entire CD collection anytime, all smushed into a tiny little iPod. Your iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Plug your iPod into your car stereo or home stereo and take it with you when you travel. No matter where you go, your music collection goes with you. iPods are easy to use and easy to import your music from your CD collection. Talk to us about this if you need help. iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Oh, it's a beautiful thing enjoying today's technologies. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics, New England's largest Apple specialist. Come see us in our Small Dog showroom in Wakefield, Vermont, or on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog, where you'll find high technology for low prices.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. In an important victory for workers and the United Auto Workers Union, a judge has dismissed a National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation lawsuit against the UAW at Freightliner. The lawsuit attacked the card check agreement the UAW used to organize Freightliner, but the judge said in his ruling, quote, participation of unions and employers in card check programs is proper and has never been held to be illegal, end quote. Card check is where workers sign union cards and the employer agrees to recognize the union when a majority of workers have signed up. Federal Judge Graham Mullen said if courts were to find card check agreements illegal, it would have the effect of criminalizing all collective bargaining agreements. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says this ruling means you can't use the courts to overturn democracy. When a majority of workers sign union cards, their right to organize is clear. Freightliner workers in three states have gone union. The New York City Central Labor Council is calling for a cab. Jesse Russell has more.
The 7,000 driver strong New York Taxi Workers Alliance is under consideration to become part of the New York City Central Labor Council. While not a labor union, the alliance is seeking to join the council to find an ally in pushing for health coverage and disability insurance. The drivers cannot legally organize as a union, as they are considered independent contractors by the current National Labor Relations Board. The Labor Council's executive director, Ed Ott, told the New York Times that the addition of the Taxi Alliance will help strengthen organized labor's ties with immigrant workers groups. The Labor Council will be voting today.
Striking janitors in Houston are calling today a Chevron Day of Action. Supporters from around the country will be protesting Chevron for not standing by fair wages and health care for the workers who clean their headquarters. The janitors are in week four of a strike to force five major office building cleaning companies in Houston to come to terms. They're working with the SEIU, who has called on Chevron to apply pressure on the companies that handle the cleaning contract. Comair's Teamster flight attendants have ratified a four-year contract that the Teamsters say strengthens job security and limits health insurance payments from workers while providing financial assistance to the company. Comair is owned by Delta Airlines, which is in bankruptcy. Connie Slayback, president of Teamsters Local 513 in Kentucky, says this agreement maintains industry-leading wages for Teamsters flight attendants.
Here's today's economic report. Feel like you're entitled to skip out on work? So do 11% of those who took unscheduled absenteeism this year. According to a Harris Interactive poll, the rate of absenteeism in the U.S. is up from 2.3% in 2005 to 2.6% in 2006. The primary reason is personal illness at 35%, followed by 24% for family issues, 18% due to personal needs, 12% for stress, and the remaining 11% because of entitlement mentality.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, president and founder of the Organic One Company. When our ads run on your program, Tom, our phone ring off the hook. So I encourage anyone to advertise, either locally or nationally, on your show, the Tom Hartman Program. Your listeners are clearly what's called in the industry our target audience. By the way, did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed crops there is? You see, the fundamental idea behind organic wine is that making wine with grapes grown without pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizers is clearly better for our planet and, therefore, in all likelihood, better for you, the wine drinker. So for more information and to support ecologically healthy agriculture, please visit our site, www.ecowine.com, or call us. We always love to talk with Tom's listeners. 1-888-ECOWINE is our number.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
You got to fight for your rights. You can't put your head in the sand. You got to fight for your rights. You can't just bury your head in the sand. Politics and religious superstition go hand in hand.
And welcome back. You tell him, Van Morrison. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Again from the Wall Street Journal today, Secretary of Commerce Carlos Gutierrez urged continued negotiation rather than confrontation with China on ways to address its yawning trade gap with the U.S. No, I'm sorry. We don't need to negotiate with China, and we don't need to confront China. We need to change our trade policies. We need to pull out of the WTO, and we need to go back to a system of tariffs where we say, hey, if there's a dollar's worth of labor and a pair of shoes made in the United States, and you want to make those shoes in China where labor costs you 10 cents, that's fine. You can do that, but we're going to charge a 90-cent tax when you bring those shoes into this country. It's just that simple. Also in the Wall Street Journal, David Rogers writing, in a post-election slap at the White House, Republicans put off action on a Vietnam trade bill until December, denying President Bush an accomplishment he had hoped to cite at an Asian Pacific Rim summit this week. That's interesting. Republicans. See, what's happening is that we are moving in that direction that FDR took this country, of back to the people. And here's what FDR had to say about it. I mean, this is solid stuff. This is just stand-up solid stuff. Franklin Roosevelt in 1936, July 1936 in Philadelphia.
That very word, freedom, in itself and of necessity suggests freedom from some restraining power. In 1776, we sought freedom from the tyranny of a political autocracy. From the 18th century royalists who held special privileges from the crown.
Yeah, but those 18th century royalists, the 1700s, right, King George's vassals in the United States, we fought a revolutionary war against them. But now, Roosevelt said in 1932, and I'm telling you, we're seeing this again because the election of 1980 brought in Reagan, who brought us the exact same thing that the election of 1921 brought us, the election of 1920 with, what was it, Coolidge, as I recall, brought in, and or was it Harding, in any case, brought in, which is corporate rule. And so Franklin Roosevelt said, you know, out of the modern era, a new aristocracy has arisen, and we have to confront them.
But since that struggle, man's inventive genius released new forces in our land, forces which reordered the lives of our people. The age of machinery, of railroads, of steam and electricity, the telegraph and the radio, mass production, mass distribution, all of these combined to bring forward a new civilization, and with it a problem for those who sought to remain free.
A problem for those who sought to remain free. In fact, he goes on to say,
for out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties.
Say, new kings have emerged.
New kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things. Through new uses of corporations and banks and securities, new machinery of industry and agriculture, of labor and capital, all undreamed of by the fathers, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service.
Now, here's the President of the United States. This, he had been president for 4 years. He is speaking about how the new royalists, there's a new royal order, and they have seized control of this country. And it is as evil and toxic as the royalists of King George III.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
This is Franklin Roosevelt in 1936, and he just lays it right flat out and says, we're going to take these guys on.
The royalists I have spoken of, the royalists of the economic order, have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business.
And it's the economic slavery that he is specifically speaking of here. This is the new tyranny.
They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work and his right to live.
And Roosevelt said, we're going to take them on.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power.
Indeed, and that's what they're yelling about right now. And Roosevelt goes on to say, we must take away this kind of power.
Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
Do you get this? The President of the United States saying our allegiance to America requires the overthrow of this kind of power that has again seized our health care system and it tries to wrap itself in the flag.
In vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution.
And again, we're seeing history repeat itself. It's amazing.
But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for.
And I would go so far as to say they not only forget it, they reject what the flag and the Constitution stand for. And thus all this damage being done to the United States of America. 1-866-440-8466, our number. George in Naperville, Illinois. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for the work you're doing. You've had a multiplicative effect in areas that you're not even heard directly, you know, through people who are talking about you for the elections.
It's good to know.
But I have two comments about the HMOs encroaching into Medicaid. That's also happened in Medicare.
Yes, I know.
And the first time they tried that, it failed, and they left thousands of Medicare recipients uncovered until they could re-enroll because they couldn't make a profit. And this time, the second round, it's because I believe the tax dollars are funding the profit margin.
Oh, absolutely. And the biggest chunk of it is happening in the prescription drug benefit. That's where United Health got the $1.78 billion to give William McGuire, the second largest provider of benefits under Section D. I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I'm a clinician, so I wanted to point out maybe semantics. No, yeah. But when you point out that private middlemen are providing like services, you know, you're quoting it, you know, like private companies are providing good service.
Right,
they don't provide any service. They're just doling out the money. I'm a clinician. I'm a neuropsychologist, and I provide service even if the middlemen keep the money and I don't get money. So
you're
the
right.
Stats don't accurately even come close to the kind of services being provided.
You're
strictly
right.
Money. That's all it has to do with it.
Yep. Yep, you're absolutely right. The Wall Street Journal is playing it very conservative in their language, shall we say. And that's the bottom line. And people are not getting services because of that. George, thank you for the call. Larry in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo what the previous caller just said, is that these companies do not provide any service. I'm a family doctor, and I really appreciate what you're talking about. I think that if we don't have a transparent national discussion on healthcare, then I don't think we can ever get to how to create any type of system that is going to provide the services that people need.
I agree, Larry. And I think that we need to combine it with what Franklin Roosevelt was talking about, because if we don't have a discussion about corporate power in America first, then our discussion about healthcare is not going to make any sense.
I agree. The approach that I take is really simple, because I think that people think about healthcare, they think all different kinds of things about it, and they think all kinds of things about doctors.
Mm-hmm.
The approach that I take is very simple. Healthcare is not a right and it's not a privilege. It is a basic, fundamental human need, just like food, clothing, and shelter. When Franklin Roosevelt talks about we have nothing to fear but fear itself, when he talks about the royalists in the speech that you were playing,
mm-hmm.
if we don't get down to fundamentals, and if we don't have a national discussion, and if we don't agree on our priorities, I mean, we agree that food, clothing, and shelter are basic necessities. Healthcare is part of that. If you don't have your health, you can't have anything else.
Right, and that's why I would submit to you that when the founders in the preamble to the Constitution listed among the six or arguably seven things that the Constitution was going to do, one of them was to promote the general welfare. And then later, where they talked about the authority of Congress to raise taxes and duties to promote the general welfare, that anything that has to do with survival, like health care, is part of the general welfare. It may not have been viewed that way, although frankly it was. And James Madison's first veto in 1811 was vetoing money that Congress was giving to a church in Virginia to care for the poor. And he said he was vetoing it because doing this would violate the separation of church and state,
right.
but that it was the obligation of the state to provide for the poor,
right.
to provide housing and health care for the poor. I mean, he lays it out in his veto message in 1811. This is the fourth president of the United States.
So I have an additional comment about the money that doctors make and
let me put you on hold here.
Okay.
Larry, we'll get right back to it. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program.
I was lucky enough to find out about Laurel Langmire. Since then, I own 16 investment properties. I have a C-Corp, an S-Corp. I have six LLCs.
Free yourself from the daily grind of your 9-to-5 job.
I experienced it in the first 4 months. I walked away with almost $300,000.
Laurel Langmire has personally coached hundreds of entrepreneurs into financial freedom.
Laurel and her team blew me away, and I went, I got to work with this lady.
Laurel teaches you how to live in a wealth cycle and stay there. A master of customized one-on-one guidance, Laurel Langmire can place you on the road to financial independence.
Hi, I'm Laurel Langmire. Creating wealth is not as difficult as you may think. If you're ready to turn your financial dreams into reality, then I want you to have my Extreme Money Makeover CD for free.
Call now for this limited time special offer. Get Laurel's Money Makeover CD and her best-selling book, The Millionaire Maker. Both the book and the CD for free. You only pay a small shipping and handling fee. Call 800-508-6820. 800-508-6820.
The waters off the coast of Oregon had almost no oxygen this summer, and this kind of dead zone is becoming an annual affair. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Unusual wind patterns have given rise to a dead zone in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Oregon every year for the past 5 years. This past summer, there was almost no oxygen in a stretch of water that covered more than 1,000 square miles. Researchers probed the area with underwater cameras, and they saw thousands of dead crabs and virtually no live fish. Francis Chan is a marine ecologist at Oregon State University.
We deployed a robot submarine with a video camera, and in a full day of work, we actually saw no live fish, and all we saw were piles of Dungeness crabs lying on the seafloor.
The dead zone develops when the winds help move currents from the deep sea closer to shore. These waters are rich in nutrients, but they're very low in oxygen. Chan says that combination starts a chain reaction that renders the water unlivable.
As oxygen gets lower and lower, a lot of mobile marine life will actually move out of the way and seek waters that have higher levels of oxygen in it. But for a lot of bottom-dwelling marine life that are either attached to the seafloor or are just not very mobile, such as crabs, they actually succumb to this dead zone.
The dead zone has developed off the Oregon coast during the summer months every year since 2002. This year's event covered the largest expanse of water and suffered the lowest levels of oxygen. Chan says no one knows for sure why this event has become so common, but he says it's definitely associated with a change in wind patterns, and those kinds of changes are predicted to happen as the Earth's climate gets warmer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Attention! If you do not have health insurance, have limited health insurance, or are uninsurable and are worried about the cost of health care, this announcement is for you. For less than $2 a day, your entire family can save thousands of dollars on all medical expenses thanks to Synergy Health. With more than 600,000 providers around the country, Synergy Health can save you up to 60% on doctors, hospitals, hearing, vision, prescriptions, and even dental care. Plus, you'll get great savings on chiropractic, alternate medicine, and much more. And here's the best part. Synergy Health offers guaranteed acceptance to everyone, no matter what your health history or income, at the same low price. Call our 800 number and learn how Synergy Health is helping families like yours for less than $2 a day. There is no obligation, and the information is free.
Call 1-800-933-2596 for free information. That's 1-800-933-2596. There's absolutely no obligation.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
No, we've got a long way to go to take back this country. A lot of damage to undo, but we can do it. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here. Listener-supported radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Supported by you, supporting our sponsors. The sponsors you hear on our local programs. Please patronize them and let them know that you're listening. And our national sponsors, including Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. Their phone number, 1-800-425-2532, sacredgroundscoffee.com. All organic, all fair trade. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS, and smalldog.com, their website. 9 minutes before the hour. We were talking with Larry in Tacoma. Larry, you wanted to make one other quick point?
Yeah, I do. I think that the we've lost sight of the value of providing health care. When it comes to certain people, when I see certain patients, they're more interested in buying a new car, making that car payment, than paying for the care that they receive. And I haven't figured out why that is. I think that sometimes, I think some people have the attitude that, well, you're supposed to provide this, and it's a necessity, so therefore I shouldn't have to pay for it. And I don't understand where that comes from. I think that if we're going to change healthcare in this country, which I think we desperately have to do because the system is broken, we have to go back to the kernel relationship, which is the doctor-patient relationship.
Yeah,
if we use bean counters, if we use insurance companies, if we use people to determine what that type of relationship is going to be, then I think we've already lost. The doctor-patient relationship is the primary relationship, and everything that revolves around healthcare must flow from that basic relationship.
No, well said, Larry. And in fact, I would say, and thank you for the call, I would say that by inserting themselves in the process, I mean, in this story in the Wall Street Journal, they talk about this poor woman who had cancer, pancreatic cancer. And she goes to four different places to try and get treatment. And in every place they say, no, I'm sorry, your company won't cover it. A radiation oncologist, Andrew Greenberg, says if it hadn't been for the special effort of somebody at the third place she went to, Melissa would have gotten lost in the system. In other words, she would have gotten no therapy at all. And that's screwing it up. Also, we need to go back to the idea that health care is a fundamental right, in my opinion. I believe that it is a right. And we need to acknowledge that in the United States and then get about the business of us providing that right to us. I remember, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, I remember the doctor actually coming to our house. Doctors made house calls back in the 1950s and 1960s. And I remember in growing up in Michigan, Blue Cross Blue Shield, our health insurance company that my dad had because he worked in a union shop, was a nonprofit corporation. It could not be for-profit. In other words, their first job had to be to deliver health care. Not to make a profit. And the hospital, we used to go to the Ingham County Hospital. It was owned by the county. And all the hospitals were not-for-profit organizations. And they're all becoming for-profit now, and the health care is being delivered by for-profit corporations. And even when we, the people, try to provide for ourselves, somehow these for-profit corporations figure out a way to weasel into the middle of it so their CEOs can skim off $77 million in compensation. It's sick and twisted. It's wrong. It's corporate power run amok. And the solution isn't just to solve our health care problem. The solution is to confront the issue of corporate power in America, the privatization of the commons. Ross in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Ross, what's on your mind?
Hey, it's Rob. Hey, Tom, I was just calling. I've heard you several times use really good and poignant quotes and speeches from Kennedy and Eisenhower and FDR like you just did. And I've been searching for them, and I just don't know where you're getting them, what kind of resource you have to get these, but I'm a hip-hop producer that would really like to include these into our music.
Well, those FDR clips are from his 1936 acceptance speech in Philadelphia when he was renominated. It was in July, as I recall, July 27th, although I could be wrong, when he was renominated for his second term as president. I got a CD of his speeches from the FDR Library. There's actually an
FDR Library.
Yeah,
I'll
provide that. The Kennedy Library provides CDs of Kennedy's speeches. A lot of them are online. The Eisenhower stuff, I've just rooted around online for almost all this stuff. All the old clips that I've got of Teddy Roosevelt and you know, the recordings that Thomas Edison made, back in the 1912s, 13, 14, 15, period. I just found all those online. They're out there. You just have to track them down. I don't have an easy site for you. We've spent a lot of hours over the years pulling these things together. So good luck, Ross. Rich in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I enjoy your show very much. I'm going to make two quick points, and then I'll get off and take your response. I know other people want to get on. Well, the first is pertaining to yesterday's show about labor. Despite tens of thousands of jobs going overseas to outsourcing and somewhere between 12 and 16 million illegals, we've got incredibly low unemployment, and we've got about 100 million-plus baby boomers entering retirement age. So we're going to be facing a severe labor shortage.
I disagree, Rich.
Okay.
I strongly disagree.
Well, and I think Western Europe and Japan are in the same situation. The other point I wanted to make.
Well,
is,
let me just lay this out here. The reason why I disagree is we're not facing a labor shortage. What we're facing is a cheap labor shortage. When the supply of labor diminishes relative to the demand for labor, the cost of labor goes up. But there will always be labor. As long as we have ghettos in America, we don't have a surplus of laborers.
Okay.
I mean, it's just that simple. Just look around.
Okay. We just have to disagree on that. I mean, the math to me is indisputable.
But you know, what folks like Pat Buchanan will tell you is not that we're going to have a labor shortage, but that we're going to have a white person shortage. That's what he's flipped out about. And they cloak that racist fear in a labor shortage mantle. So
agree with that. On the last point, wealth is a tool. It's neither good or bad. Look at what Melinda and Bill Gates have done, Richard Branson, Warren Buffett. Some of the great universities in this country were built by those mega wealthy people that Franklin Roosevelt was railing on.
Sure. And a lot of harm was done by a lot of those folks as well. I mean, as you point out, wealth in and of itself is like a scalpel. It can cut or it can heal. But at the same time, we decide who gets to hold scalpels. And I think at a certain level, we need to say, okay, you know, you want to make millions, that's fine. You want to make billions, we're going to tax you. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The American middle class is on its deathbed. Ordinary folks who put in a solid day's work can no longer afford to buy a house, send their kids to college, or even get sick. If you're not a CEO, you're probably screwed. In his latest book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It by Tom Hartman, Air America host Tom Hartman shows how the middle class, a product of democracy that was so carefully put together by our country's founding fathers, has been systematically dismantled over the past quarter century and, under the guise of freeing the market, replaced by an anti-democratic system designed to line the pockets of the super rich and corporations. Hartman shows that it's not too late to return to the America our founders envisioned. Democracy requires a fair playing field. It will survive only if we the people stand up, speak out, and reclaim our democracy. To find out more about Tom's book tour, or to get an audio sneak peek of Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, visit TomHartman.com. Get Screwed by Tom Hartman. Available in all fine bookstores now.
Is mom okay? How often does that question run through your mind? If your mom is living alone and not as agile as she used to be, or if she fell, would she be okay? That question may nag you a dozen times every day. Lifeline Medical Alert Service is the answer to that nagging question. Lifeline is there for her and you 24 hours a day, every day. A push of a button and help is on the way. That's why Lifeline is the trusted medical alert service caring for over 500,000 people like your mom every day. Lifeline lets mom live in the home she loves and still have help available 24 hours a day, every day with just the push of a button. For your free information package, call 800-566-6208 because your mom or dad deserves Lifeline, and you deserve the peace of mind. Call 800-566-6208 today. That's 800-566-6208. Call Lifeline now.
Air America Radio News. I'm Christabel Insiabwadi. News brought to you by the SEIU, supporting the janitors of Houston, Texas, at HoustonJanitors.org. Mississippi Republican Trent Lott was selected by his party today to once again serve in its Senate's leadership. Lott was forced to step down as Senate Majority Leader in 2002 after he said publicly that America wouldn't have had so many problems if notorious segregationist Strom Thurmond had won his 1948 presidential campaign. Though the vote was by secret ballot, it was apparently close, with soon-to-be former Senator Rick Santorum telling reporters that Lott beat Senator Lamar Alexander for the minority whip position by only one vote. Lott will serve as second in command to Kentucky's Mitch McConnell. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats voted yesterday to keep their current leaders in place. Senators Harry Reid and Richard Durbin will remain in the number one and two positions respectively, while Senator Chuck Schumer will continue at the helm of the party's fundraising machine. Schumer will also become the party's vice chairman, making him a key strategist in the 2008 campaign. House Democrats have had less success in agreeing on their leadership, with some criticizing Speaker to be Nancy Pelosi for backing Jack Murphy over Steny Hoyer, her current second-in-command for the majority leader position. General John Abizé today appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee, which has started re-examining U.S. policy in Iraq following last week's congressional sweep by Democrats. Michigan Democrat Carl Levin, who will chair the panel from January 2007, said before the general spoke that America cannot save Iraq from itself and that the White House must prepare that country's government for U.S. troops to begin phased withdrawals in the next 4 to 6 months. Abizé disagreed and warned against any approach that involves an explicit timeline, arguing that it would limit the flexibility of American commanders. And former lobbyist Jack Abramoff reported today to the Maryland prison where he will spend the next six years for his role in a fraudulent Florida business deal. Abramoff will be held in a minimum security wing of the facility. You're listening to Air America Radio News on the Air America Radio Network. My name is Christabel Insiabwadi.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice, making it easy to add whole grain to your diet. For delicious brown rice recipes, visit them on the web. Enjoy Mahatma or Carolina Rice. It's good for you.
If you think it's too late in life to earn the college degree you want, then listen to this. Now you can go to a university designed for busy working adults. It's University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. In most cases, you can earn a bachelor's or a master's degree in just 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-866-431-3600. At over 170 University of Phoenix campuses, the small classroom settings are designed for working adults with busy lives. With their efficient learning model, you'll cover more material in less time, going to convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. For a complimentary brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more, call University of Phoenix now, 1-866-431-3600. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. Classes are forming, so call now, 1-866-431-3600. That's 1-866-431-3600.
You be the judge. New FlexoFactor helps promote joint strength, flexibility, lubrication, range of motion, and even the renewal of cartilage from your hands and knees to your hips and elbows. And we'll prove it by letting you try it free. A $30 bottle, free. FlexoFactor is a new all-natural joint support supplement that combines 5 specific joint supporting ingredients in one exclusive formula. FlexoFactor helps cushion, lubricate, and strengthen joints and cartilage over time. It's perfect for seniors, weekend athletes, anyone who depends on healthy joints for an active lifestyle. But don't take our word for it. You be the judge. Call now and try a free bottle of FlexoFactor, a $30 value. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover shipping and handling. FlexoFactor. We know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Call 1-800-364-9974. That's 1-800-364-9974. Limit one bottle per household. Call 1-800-364-9974.
How is your memory these days? Are you forgetting things like names and numbers, what you just read or heard? Are you misplacing things like keys or glasses or having trouble concentrating? If so, please listen carefully. These mild memory problems are a normal part of aging, but they can grow with time and seriously affect your job, home, or social life unless you act now. Because for the first time, there's an amazing new memory booster called MemoProve, a scientific breakthrough based on 10 years of research that is a safe and effective one-a-day tablet that protects and improves short-term memory, increases concentration, and boosts mental alertness. It's the only product that contains neuropeptides, which are clinically tested to improve memory in just 30 days. Find out how you can get a free 60-day supply of MemoProve and experience the power of MemoProve firsthand. Call 1-800-441-0664, 1-800-441-0664. This offer is limited, so find out how to get your free 60-day supply of MemoProve today. Call 1-800-441-0664, 1-800-441-0664.
Premature babies need hope, love, and you. Premature birth is the leading cause of newborn death and many serious health problems. It happens to 1 out of 8 babies in the U.S. You can help premature babies by joining March of Dimes Walk America and raising money to support research and programs to find out how to prevent premature birth and how to help families who experience it. Register today. Get your sponsor form at Kmart or Famous Footwear, or visit walkamerica.org or call 1-800-525-WALK.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. How do we frame things? How do we look at things? How does the political debate get determined? You know, the framing is half the battle. It's arguably three-quarters of the battle. If you can define the frame, you're defining the battlefield. And if you know what your assets are and what your opponent's resources or liabilities are, and you can define the battlefield, you can win. One of the experts on this issue is leading experts in the United States, Jeffrey Feldman. Frameshopisopen.com is his website. Frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey Feldman with us here in the studio. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Over at frameshopisopen.com, Trent Lott taking the GOP backwards. This is a frame that the Democrats should be using.
Yeah, it just announced earlier today that Trent Lott is going to get the number two spot in the Senate, which is amazing because it was only in 2002 that he made some pretty outrageous statements in honor of Strom Thurmond at his 100th birthday about how great the country would have been if we had all voted for Strom Thurmond. So it's incredible because what happened in the wake of those statements is that it was the first time really that bloggers got together and brought the problem of those statements to the attention of the public, the racist undertones in them.
Well, and just for our listeners who don't know, Strom Thurmond, I forget what year it was he ran for president, but it was in the 50s or 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he ran on a third party. It might have been called the Constitution Party. I forget the name of it now. But the basic bottom line of the party was to fight to maintain segregation in the United States. This had to be before 1967 when the Civil Rights Act was passed, and to keep African Americans as second class citizens. Strom Thurmond, the guy who had as a teenager had an affair with a maid and produced a child. Now we discover, and. Or actually, he was a young adult, and it was a teenage maid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Way around, yeah. And so here's this guy who openly advocates segregation, apartheid in the United States, and that was the basis of his campaign for president. It wasn't part of it. It was the entire basis of it. And Trent Lott says America would be a whole lot better now if you'd been elected president back then.
Yeah, I mean, specifically what he said was in 2002, you know, we're proud of it, and if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over these years. At the end of the quote from Lott. What he meant by all these problems, of course, was the civil rights movement in the South.
Right, uppity black folks. How dare they?
And this ended Trent Lott's tenure as the Republican majority leader in the Senate. It ended it pretty quickly. And it brought to the fore a whole bunch of really seedy characters. In particular, this group of people, the Council of Conservative Citizens, people like Richard Lee Baum, who also created problems in the Virginia Senate race for George Allen. You had a bunch of people who were attempting to use this particular outgrowth of racist politics in order to build political majorities to take back majorities for the Republican Party. And that derailed Trent Lott. And lo and behold, in the wake of the midterm elections, the Republicans have turned back to Lott, apparently launching a strategy where they're going to once again try to appeal to the basis of their Republican base.
Well, and in fact, they did. In the 2006 election, that's how they took down Harold Ford.
Exactly. So what's happening since the losses is that, you know, Karl Rove is sitting around, and he's saying to his to the people that he works for, look, we didn't have a big loss. We lost by just 70,000 votes. And so the way to get it back is to play both ends off against the middle. Right. We're going to reappeal to the racist base of the party on the one hand. And on the other hand, over at the RNC, they appointed Mel Martinez in order to try to appeal to Latino voters.
Right, right. And that, you know, as soon as I saw that Mel Martinez was being made the head of the RNC and was not stepping down from the Senate, which means he's just a figurehead. He's going to be the name, you know, on who signs the letters, basically. That's it. And those letters will and does the radio commercials in Spanish, in his own voice, that play on the Hispanic radio stations all over the country for the next 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, however long he's the head of the RNC. I turned to Louise and I said, this is all about reaching out to the Latino vote in the United States.
But reaching out to a very specific segment of it, because if you listen to what the president has said, and you know, following his event where they appointed Martinez, the president came out and he really pushed this rags-to-riches idea, this old idea that they were talking about in the Republican Party in terms of the ownership society. They're now going to start pumping that idea at what they see as a rising entrepreneurial part of the Latino vote, with a hope of not appealing to all Latinos, but just to a small percentage, just enough to get them 5,000 votes here, 4,000 votes there, in order to
right.
take back the House.
Not unlike the conservative Cubans in Miami.
Exactly. It's a strategy that's worked for them in the past. So they're going to bump up the number of racist votes that they've got, bump up the number of Republican Latinos, and in Karl Rove's somewhat twisted imagination, they're going to take back all that they lost in this particular election.
And if my recollection is right, Mel Martinez himself is a Cuban-American, right?
Yes.
He was a Cuban refugee.
And that's the story that the president tells about Martinez, getting, you know, put on the boat by his parents and coming over with nothing and turning into a successful man and a senator.
We're talking to Jeffrey Feldman, the editor-in-chief over at FrameShopIsOpen.com, all about framing. You say, Jeffrey, over on Frame Shop is Open, that it's not bipartisanship.
Exactly. That's in the wake of the election, you had this incredible outpouring, or so it appeared, of an interest in bipartisanship from the president, in which he convened these really really peculiar meetings. He called the new Democratic leadership into the Oval Office and had these staged breakfasts in which he said that it was really important, now that the election was over, that the Republicans and Democrats work together to solve problems.
These were really photo ops, though.
They're incredible photo ops. They were an attempt to stage some type of appearance of cooperation, while at the same time they're working behind the scenes, no doubt, in order to push through the legislation and gains that they could only get in this last few days, the last few months, really, before the Democrats take over.
Why is the media buying it? I mean, on the one hand, you have Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid actually talking about trying to be bipartisan and talking about changing the rules so that they're going back to the way it was for 220-some-odd years in the United States, where minority parties still had a say in the political process. And you have Republicans talking about bipartisanship but not acting it.
Well, the media buys it because the Republicans bombard them with this particular narrative, and the Democrats had not provided an alternative. The alternative that the Democrats needed to put out there was this notion that the public did not vote for them in order to have bipartisanship with the Republican Party. They voted for them to restore constitutional balance to our system of government, to restore oversight and accountability. So what the Democrats needed to do is say, yeah, we're going to set a new tone, but we're also going to institute some measures that are going to guarantee oversight on Iraq, oversight on the economy, to raise the minimum wage and so forth. And they did start to do that. To Harry Reid's credit, they did start in the past 24 hours to talk about oversight on Iraq and instituting hearings. But initially, I think that they were just a little bit overwhelmed by the success, and they didn't get out those communicates to the media. So all the media had was that that fog of faxes that comes from the RNC every time we have a moment like this.
Yeah, and it really is a fog of faxes. I get them here, and emails. Rumsfeld is out. I'm interested in how this is being framed all over the place. I mean, you have Newsweek basically saying the adults are taking over. Daddy is back. Poppy is back, and his guy Robert Gates is coming in. On the other hand, Robert Gates has a long business relationship with both Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. I'm frankly very skeptical that Dick Cheney being marginalized is something that's going to last very long. I think Cheney's going to reassert himself. If he doesn't, he's going to be facing prosecution. And I don't think that's tolerable to him. What's your guess on how this is going to play out? And what are the operational frames here?
I think that what we're seeing here with the reappointment of the secretary to the Department of Defense is they're setting up an opportunity for the Baker Commission to make a recommendation and for the White House to accept it. And I think the key frame coming out of that will be talking to Syria and to Iran. I think that the notion of convening a regional conference of diplomacy is an idea that was pushed very strongly by the Democrats before before the elections. It's an idea that the American public wants to move forward. And it's something that allows the president, you know, in a sense, to save face, for him to say, look, our goal has always been a political process. And so even before we pull out, we're going to convene these particular talks, bilateral talks.
So he's going to do what the senator from Vermont back in the 1960s recommended to LBJ, declare victory and withdraw.
Exactly. And part of what he's going to do is appropriate the Democratic message, which is what Bush has been doing ever since he was a governor in Texas. That used to be called falling forward, where he would lose an election, lose a political battle, and then the next day he would just appropriate his opponent's message and then claim victory.
Mm.
So yeah. he's going to become the great diplomat.
Indeed, yeah. Unless we reframe it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Indeed. Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com, the website. Check it out. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Tom.
Great talking with you today. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't let Limbaugh know. He'll want some.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Orrick XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Orrick XL.
Thinking of incorporating your business? Here's good news. Now there's an easier, more affordable way. Just log on to MyCorp.com. We're an online service from the makers of QuickBooks, so you know your filing will be simple, hassle-free, and done right. Prices start at just $149 plus state fees. And for a limited time, you'll get a free starter edition of QuickBooks Financial Software when you form your corporation or LLC at MyCorp.com. That's MyCorp.com.
Like Alice's trip into Wonderland, let's go inside George W.'s head for a moment. Being Bush must be a wonderful existential experience. Fantasy is reality, lies are truth, and history is what you say it is. Take the White House's recent surreal wrestling match with Bush's own tongue. For months leading up to the congressional elections, George had used the phrase, stay the course, both to define his war strategy in Iraq and to impale critics, implying that they did not have the moral fortitude to do the job. But whoa, as the war news grew ever more grim and the public turned against Bush's policy, stay the course was not a politically helpful metaphor, so it was jettisoned. But then, things turned really barmy in the wonderland of Bush world. Rather than just drop the phrase, White House press flack Tony Snow insisted that Bush had, quote, never said it. Then, bizarrely, Bush himself denied his own tongue. Listen, he barked to ABC News, we'd never been stay the course. But people had heard him say it. Okay, Snow finally confessed, we've now done a Google search of George's speeches and, quote, to be fair, the president did say stay the course 8 times. So big deal, Snow said. It just proves that Bush barely used the phrase. Only it was a big deal, since the Mad Hatters of Bush world were still lying about it. After Snow's correction, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann ran video clips of George saying, stay the course, not 8 times, but 29. Moreover, the White House's own record of press releases contains 160 uses of stay the course. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Bush wrestled with his tongue, and the tongue won. This would merely be comically embarrassing for the White House, except that it shows that Bush's capacity for self-delusion and public deception knows no bounds.
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing?
On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder, millions of jobs are being exported, and now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout, America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Yeah, keep looking toward the light, my friends. It's out there. By the way, I'll be at the Live Wire, or on Live Wire, the radio theater at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, about my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class. Radio variety show recorded in front of a theater audience at the Aladdin Theater on November 16th, Thursday, November 16th. Price is $10 at the door, and $12 at the door, $10 advance. For the folks in the Pacific Northwest, just a quick heads up. 22 minutes past the hour. Just a quick review here. And welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-THOM. That's 440-8466. And our website, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, will get you there. And just click live chat if you want to drop into our live chat room. And Thursday night, yeah, that's tomorrow night. I'll be at the Aladdin Theater. Let's keep track of this stuff here. All righty. The 10 impeachable offenses committed by Bush and Cheney. See, I think that this needs a certain amount of reframing. Yes, these are impeachable offenses. Even worse. See, I don't think this is about impeachment. Ultimately, I think that that's a reasonable remedy. But this is about educating the American public about how American government is supposed to work. The fact that these guys got away with these 10 things up till this point speaks volumes about what is not known by the average American about how our government is supposed to work and what democracy stands for, what a constitutionally limited republic means. In Portland, yes. And so violating the, here, just a quick list. And then to the Fox memo. And then to the reality on the ground. And then to, you know, what's going on with Dick Cheney. That's my roadmap here for this hour. Number one, violating the United Nations Charter by launching an illegal war of aggression against Iraq without cause, using fraud to sell the war to Congress and the public, and misusing government funds to begin bombing without congressional authorization. I don't think the average American even knows that the congressional authorization that George Bush had, the authorization that John Kerry voted for before he voted against it, or was it the other way around? That authorization required George Bush to submit a letter to Congress before he began bombing Iraq, which said that he had proof in hand that Iraq was involved in 9/11. The congressional authorization required that Bush demonstrate, or Bush state, that he had proof that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11 before he could attack Iran.
Iraq, excuse me. And George Bush, in fact, did write a letter to that effect and submit it to Congress. But when was the last time you heard even one single news report referencing that? Number two, violating U.S. and international law by authorizing the torture of thousands of captives, resulting in dozens of deaths, and keeping prisons hidden from the International Committee of the Red Cross. We are signatories to multiple treaties that involve the Red Cross and the United Nations and the Geneva Conventions. Those are the law of our land. It is forbidden internationally to create secret prisons and to torture people in them. And yet George Bush did that. And not just George Bush. A whole bunch of Republicans in this administration. And some Democrats were complicit in this as well, no doubt. And why is the average American not realized the enormity of that crime? Why is it that it's the Germans who are reminding us of this? Number three, violating the Constitution by arbitrarily detaining Americans, legal residents, and non-Americans without due process, without charge, and without access to counsel. Jose Padilla, an American citizen, arrested inside the United States, and George Bush, for 3 years, asserted that he had the right to keep this guy in jail and never let him see a lawyer and never tell him what he was being charged with simply because George Bush had decided that he wanted to. He was asserting that the guy was a terrorist. Turns out when they finally looked at the evidence, he wasn't. It had nothing to do with it. So Bush basically, and the Bush administration, the Republicans of the Bush administration, asserting absolute power. Violation of the Geneva Conventions by targeting civilians, journalists, hospitals, and ambulances, and using illegal weapons, including white phosphorus and depleted uranium, and a new type of napalm. All of these outlawed by international law. Violating number five, violating U.S. law and the Constitution through widespread wiretapping of phone calls and emails of Americans without a warrant. And the question that is in my mind is, to what extent did George Bush do the exact same thing that Richard Nixon did, which is use the NSA not just to spy on bad guys, but to spy on Democrats, to spy for partisan purposes? Number six, violating the Constitution by using signing statements to defy hundreds of laws passed by Congress. Number seven, violating U.S. and state law by obstructing honest elections. Number eight, using paid propaganda and disinformation. This is a violation of the Smith Act and others. And the unitary executive theory, subverting the Constitution. 27 minutes past the hour.
Real words from real people about Lifeline screening.
I was told I should see my doctor or go to the emergency room immediately. Later I said to the physician, I guess I'm pretty lucky to have had those tests. He answered, it saved your life.
In less than 1 hour, Lifeline screening checks for warning signs of stroke and vascular disease. Nearly 50% of people that suffer a stroke never have symptoms. Don't wait until it's too late. Get screened today.
The doctor said I'm one lucky guy, and if I hadn't gone to the screening, I would have been a statistic.
$129, 4 ultrasound tests, no needles, no pain, just peace of mind.
I owe my life to you.
Mobile testing units are coming to your neighborhood. If you're over 50, make an appointment by calling 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
Lifeline screening saved my life.
Please call now. 1-888-908-TEST. That's 1-888-908-TEST.
The American middle class is on its deathbed. Ordinary folks who put in a solid day's work can no longer afford to buy a house, send their kids to college, or even get sick. If you're not a CEO, you're probably screwed. In his latest book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It by Tom Hartman, Air America host Tom Hartman shows how the middle class, a product of democracy that was so carefully put together by our country's founding fathers, has been systematically dismantled over the past quarter century and, under the guise of freeing the market, replaced by an anti-democratic system designed to line the pockets of the super rich and corporations. Hartman shows that it's not too late to return to the America our founders envisioned. Democracy requires a fair playing field. It will survive only if we the people stand up, speak out, and reclaim our democracy. To find out more about Tom's book tour, or to get an audio sneak peek of Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, visit TomHartman.com. Get Screwed by Tom Hartman. Available in all fine bookstores now.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. In an important victory for workers and the United Auto Workers Union, a judge has dismissed a National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation lawsuit against the UAW at Freightliner. The lawsuit attacked the card check agreement the UAW used to organize Freightliner, but the judge said in his ruling, quote, participation of unions and employers in card check programs is proper and has never been held to be illegal. End quote. Card check is where workers sign union cards and the employer agrees to recognize the union when a majority of workers have signed up. Federal Judge Graham Mullen said if courts were to find card check agreements illegal, it would have the effect of criminalizing all collective bargaining agreements. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says this ruling means you can't use the courts to overturn democracy. When a majority of workers sign union cards, their right to organize is clear. Freightliner workers in three states have gone union. The New York City Central Labor Council is calling for a cab. Jesse Russell has more.
The 7,000 driver strong New York Taxi Workers Alliance is under consideration to become part of the New York City Central Labor Council. While not a labor union, the alliance is seeking to join the council to find an ally in pushing for health coverage and disability insurance. The drivers cannot legally organize as a union, as they are considered independent contractors by the current National Labor Relations Board. The Labor Council's executive director, Ed Ott, told the New York Times that the addition of the Taxi Alliance will help strengthen organized labor's ties with immigrant workers' groups. The Labor Council will be voting today.
Striking janitors in Houston are calling today a Chevron Day of Action. Supporters from around the country will be protesting Chevron for not standing by fair wages and health care for the workers who clean their headquarters. The janitors are in week four of a strike to force five major office building cleaning companies in Houston to come to terms. They're working with the SEIU, who has called on Chevron to apply pressure on the companies that handle the cleaning contract. Comair's Teamster flight attendants have ratified a four-year contract that the Teamsters say strengthens job security and limits health insurance payments from workers while providing financial assistance to the company. Comair is owned by Delta Airlines, which is in bankruptcy. Connie Slayback, president of Teamsters Local 513 in Kentucky, says this agreement maintains industry-leading wages for Teamsters flight attendants.
Here is today's economic report. Feel like you are entitled to skip out on work? So do 11% of those who took unscheduled absenteeism this year. According to a Harris Interactive poll, the rate of absenteeism in the U.S. is up from 2.3% in 2005 to 2.6% in 2006. The primary reason is personal illness at 35%, followed by 24% for family issues, 18% due to personal needs, 12% for stress, and the remaining 11% because of entitlement mentality.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, president and founder of the Organic One Company. When our ads run on your program, Tom, our phone ring off the hook. So I encourage anyone to advertise, either locally or nationally, on your show, the Tom Hartman Program. Your listeners are clearly what's called in the industry our target audience. By the way, did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed crops there is? You see, the fundamental idea behind organic wine is that making wine with grapes grown without pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizers is clearly better for our planet and, therefore, in all likelihood, better for you, the wine drinker. So for more information and to support ecologically healthy agriculture, please visit our site, www.ecowine.com, or call us. We always love to talk with Tom's listeners. 1-888-ECOWINE is our number.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, it's a strange old game to learn slow. One step forward and it's back to go. You're standing on the throttle, standing on the brake. In the groove till you make a mistake. Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug, sometimes
you're we need to remind the Republicans of that, right?
Sometimes you're a fool.
And those so-called conservative Democrats, right? Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug.
Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. Swami Beyond Ananda in Santa Rosa, California. My old friend the Swami on the line. Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. I want to welcome you to the Bay Area.
Thank you. You're listening on the Quake.
That's right. And you know what? I want to congratulate you on helping people wake up and wise up, because we could use a good upwising right about now.
We terribly need an upwising in the United States.
Yeah, and you know, the American evolution has begun, because the day after the election, the first big shot was fired.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. Yeah, Rumsfeld. Yeah.
Yes, and so now we have to do the rest of the part. And I know, as the Swami, I can predict that the farce is most definitely with us.
The farce is with us.
Yes, because the last two Republican senators to be defeated were Burns and Allen.
You're right. You're right.
So now it is time to say to Bush and Cheney, say goodnight, disgracey.
I love it. Oh, my. Okay. Swami Beyond Ananda, wakeuplaughing.com. Your real name is Steve, and Steve, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Steve Behrman, wakeuplaughing.com. And thank you for the welcome to San Francisco. 1-866-440-8466, our number. Chris in Salinas, California. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
I just wanted to bring to light, I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but this lady, Susan Dudley, has been appointed by George Bush to head the OMB.
Office of Management and Budget.
And she's in Senate confirmation right now, from what I understand. And I just want to put out there that we need to call our senators and tell that this lady is the neocon of neocons of anti-regulation. She makes the guy that's there now, or was there, Graham, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
He makes him look like, a godsend to regulatory people. I mean, she is just outrageous. And,
yeah,
she comes from George Mason University, I believe.
She was the director of regulatory study program at the Mercatus Center. Over at SourceWatch, they have quite a piece on her, and we'll see. I don't disagree with you, but see, here's the bottom line, Chris. Yeah, the Bush administration and the Republican Party, by and large, and some Democrats in Congress, I'd say, probably a good third of them, believe that regulation is a bad thing. They believe that the free market will solve all problems. They don't realize that there is no such thing as a free market, that markets are the creation of government to a large extent. You know, once you go beyond just, like you and I deciding to barter something, markets exist on the substrate of laws, contract laws. Currency is created by government. The laws are created by government. The courts enforce the contracts. That's government. There's prisons for people like Ken Lay who don't play along, unless the Bush family gets to them first. That's what creates markets. And you've got these people who have this ideology, and Dudley is certainly one of them, who have this ideology that, we just need to let the corporations run everything. And go ahead.
Hello?
This goes
right to our point about your point about FDR saying that we can take this back. But the only problem is like you said, we have Democrats in there, 13 of them which voted to get rid of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we going to get back from the corporations if we have the Democrats who are run by the corporations? I'm just
too
frustrated.
We need to do two things at the same time. We need to, and both of them have to do with standing up and speaking out and getting involved with local politics and getting out there and getting active. The two things we have to do are, number one, purge ourselves politically, Republicans, Democrats, Greens, whatever it may be, of those people who are beholden to the corporate powers in America, who are those economic royalists that Franklin Roosevelt talked about. And on the other hand, hold accountable the rest. The fact of the matter is that a lot of elected officials are going to respond to whatever the greatest pressure is. And so if the greatest pressure is us rather than the healthcare industry, for example, or any the fill in the blank industry, the tobacco industry, the oil lobby, whatever, if the greatest pressure is us, they will come around to our way of looking at things. I mean, you look back at the history of America, and over and over and over again, it didn't take massively throwing out politicians to change their worldview. All it took was a massive change in public opinion. Whether it had to do with the legalization of abortion in 73 or the end of segregation in 54 or, you know, the vote of women in 1920. I mean, you go right on down the list all the way back to the founding of this country. It wasn't, none of these things were the result of massive tectonic changes in who was representing us. They were the result of massive tectonic changes in the opinions of the public at large. And so it has to do with waking up our neighbors, waking up our friends. You know,
Barbara Boxer was on Tim Russert a while back,
yeah.
And she personally said that she's for publicly funded campaigns.
Yeah.
So I would like to see her hold true to that.
Yeah, I would too. In fact, I'd like to see, you know, now that Russ Feingold has said he doesn't want to run for president, I would love to see him or Barbara Boxer. I consider them among the more progressive members of the United States Senate. As the Senate leader instead of Harry Reid, frankly. I mean, that's, you know, but we have what we have right now. Let's hope that we can move Harry Reid in a more populist and progressive direction as well. But the bottom line is that populism, for lack of a better word, and all of these words are very squishy, you know, progressive, populist, you know, whatever, they're all very squishy. But that is the trend that this country is moving in. You see it in the news. You see, you know, from Keith Olbermann on MSNBC to Lou Dobbs on CNN to the pseudo libertarian, but I'd say he's probably also fairly much a populist. Bill Maher over on HBO. I mean, right across, it's kind of cutting right across. On Comedy Central, Jon Stewart, a lot of his, more and more, you're seeing populism coming into these things, and I think that's a good and healthy thing, and it has to be driven by us. We need to keep pushing that and pushing our politicians. Politicians do not lead; they follow, and they follow us if we stand up and speak out. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Craig in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
You are such a good orator of the things that are going on around us. And you brought up before what you just mentioned just this moment, that it has to be driven home to people that they are our representatives, not our leaders. So it is up to us to ask them what we want them to represent.
Yeah, yeah. Or not even to ask them, to tell them. It is up to us to say, this is what we want. And the way you do that is the most direct way you can do that, frankly, is by calling their offices. Emails, by and large, don't work anymore. Most congressional offices, they get so much spam and so much email that they just don't pay attention to it.
Even look at you. I mean, I've heard you say before, there's ways to get a hold of you, but email doesn't work because you have such a, you know.
Yeah, I'm slammed. The best way to reach me is to call this show.
That's not why I called.
Yeah, okay.
I called because what you brought up just a few minutes ago is I was just getting rid of my email the other day, and I noticed that there's the documentation from John Conyers. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the after Downing Street where he has, whatever you call it. He wrote a book on the 26 different laws that the Bush administration has broken.
Yeah.
And part of the reasons for the impeachment, and this had to do with Downing Street, but it also had to do with, like I said, 26, and you brought up a few, but I just wanted to put that out there, that's out there. And if you look it up under John Conyers Downing Street, you can buy it, which helps fund all those good progressive things.
Yeah, well said, Craig. Thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. And also, John Conyers wrote What Went Wrong in Ohio, which is another indictment of the Republicans. Certainly of Ken Blackwell. I mean, there's a guy who should be looking at a courtroom. Peter in Leiden, Massachusetts. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, but we've been promised so many investigations and inquiries. The anthrax debacle many years ago now.
Yeah.
There was a promised investigation into that, which killed postal workers and threatened several outstanding members of the Democratic Party.
And for our listeners who are not familiar, Peter, if I may interrupt you for just a moment and just frame this thing properly in my mind. Here we had because Jim Jeffords left the Republican Party, the Democrats took control of the Senate, which meant that there were two men who were in a position to stop the Patriot Act. Tom Daschle, who controlled what got to the floor, he was the leader of the Senate, and Pat Leahy, who was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, the committee through which the Patriot Act had to pass. Both of these men indicated that they had serious reservations about the Patriot Act. They were the only two guys in the Congress of the United States who received anthrax in the mail. And they had to leave their offices, they had to leave their papers behind, they had to leave all their documentation behind, they had to move into temporary offices, and lo and behold, they got the wits scared out of them, and the Patriot Act got passed. And then, all of a sudden, the investigation into who sent that anthrax just kind of went away.
Yeah, well, that's in the congressional level, but also the deaths of many postal workers. There were several postal workers that were killed in the
war. Yeah, and a reporter for a tabloid newspaper. I would guess that most of those were, I think, frankly, the targets were Leahy and Daschle, and everything else was just, you know, to smokescreen.
Yeah, but there's no news on any culprit or where the anthrax came from or anything.
Well, we're pretty sure that the anthrax came from Fort Detrick.
Weaponized. Very quickly, the other person that I'm worried about a little bit is I haven't heard much from Greg Palast, and I knew he was under some sort of investigation.
Yeah, he was. He was on this show. He was sort of arrested, and they let him go. He came back on the program and talked about how he was out of that. So yeah, I think he's in pretty good shape. GregPalast.com if you want the information. 45 minutes past the hour.
Maybe you see people listening to their iPods, white earbuds dangling from their ears, and maybe you don't have an iPod yet because you don't see yourself as that type of person. So are you the type that has a CD player or a six-disc changer in your car? Heck with that. Don't limit yourself. Enjoy your entire CD collection anytime, all smushed into a tiny little iPod. Your iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Plug your iPod into your car stereo or home stereo and take it with you when you travel. No matter where you go, your music collection goes with you. iPods are easy to use and easy to import your music from your CD collection. Talk to us about this if you need help. iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Oh, it's a beautiful thing enjoying today's technologies. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics, New England's largest Apple specialist. Come see us in our Small Dog showroom in Waitsfield, Vermont, or on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog, where you'll find high technology for low prices.
The waters off the coast of Oregon had almost no oxygen this summer, and this kind of dead zone is becoming an annual affair. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Unusual wind patterns have given rise to a dead zone in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Oregon every year for the past 5 years. This past summer, there was almost no oxygen in a stretch of water that covered more than 1,000 square miles. Researchers probed the area with underwater cameras, and they saw thousands of dead crabs and virtually no live fish. Francis Chan is a marine ecologist at Oregon State University.
We deployed a robot submarine with a video camera, and in a full day of work, we actually saw no live fish, and all we saw were piles of Dungeness crabs lying on the seafloor.
The dead zone develops when the winds help move currents from the deep sea closer to shore. These waters are rich in nutrients, but they're very low in oxygen. Chan says that combination starts a chain reaction that renders the water unlivable.
As oxygen gets lower and lower, a lot of mobile marine life will actually move out of the way and seek waters that have higher levels of oxygen in it. But for a lot of bottom-dwelling marine life that are either attached to the seafloor or are just not very mobile, such as crabs, they actually succumb to this dead zone.
The dead zone has developed off the Oregon coast during the summer months every year since 2002. This year's event covered the largest expanse of water and suffered the lowest levels of oxygen. Chan says no one knows for sure why this event has become so common, but he says it's definitely associated with a change in wind patterns, and those kinds of changes are predicted to happen as the Earth's climate gets warmer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Hi, sports fans. I'm world champion football handicapper Wayne Allen Root, the man the media calls America's handicapper. I've won 12 documented national championships. All of you who watch me on the Discovery Channel Saturday mornings on the Winning Edge Football Pregame Show at 8:30 a.m. Eastern, 7:30 a.m. Central, know that I'm the number one football handicapper in television history. Two seasons ago on national television, I won 69% of my college plays for the season, but my private clients fared even better. They won 13 out of 14 college football weekends. That's 93% winning weeks for the season. documented. When was the last time you won 13 out of 14 weeks to let you experience the sheer joy of winning? Here's an offer you can't refuse. I'm giving you an entire weekend of winners absolutely free at 800-537-1496. That's 800-537-1496. And get an entire weekend of winners free at 800-537-1496. Even better, make the call within the next 5 minutes and receive tonight's game as an added bonus free at 800-537-1496.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Anybody here see my friend Jack Abramoff? Can you tell me where he's gone? Last time I saw him, he was influence peddling. The conviction came, now he's gone.
Oh, it's so sad.
Anybody here see my old friend Tom DeVay? Can you tell me where he's gone? He took corporate money for Texas elections. The indictment came, now he's gone.
Ah, the good they do die young. Welcome back.
Corruption.
9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Victoria Jones is with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., an accredited White House reporter. Victoria Jones is that's a big deal, actually, in the reporting world, and I salute you for it. Victoria Jones, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
You are also our senior I Am Not a Racist correspondent.
That's right, me and Trent Lott.
You and Trent Lott, I see. Okay. By the way, before we get into Trent Lott, I want to get your take on this this Fox memo. Are you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with the Fox memo.
For our listeners who are not, let me just very very quickly share a little bit of this thing. This memo went out. It's the Thursday update. This was the 2 days after the election. Let's be on the lookout for any statements from the Iraqi insurgents who must be thrilled at the prospect of a Dem-controlled Congress.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so this. My recollection is that the tenets of journalism, and you're a real journalist, you know, the core tenets of journalism ran something like tell the truth, get all the facts, look at every side of the story, don't insert your own bias or anybody else's bias, check every fact reported. These are all completely contrary to how Fox News conducts itself. When is the American media as an institution going to recognize Fox News as a propaganda instrument and not as a news organization?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is I think that the American media does in a quiet kind of a way. I think at least the reporters and journalists do, but there's not much they can do about it. Mm-hmm. But I also think it is possible that the writer of that memo was trying to be funny.
But this is only one of many. I mean,
right.
You know, we both know that the daily memo that comes down from Roger Ailes is all about how to spin the news.
Exactly.
So,
it is. But I do think people know and do recognize exactly what Fox News is. And I can tell you that some of the reporters for Fox News know exactly what Fox News is, and they know what their marching orders are.
Yeah. It's just a tragedy that the people watching don't realize what Fox News is.
I know.
So back to Trent Lott. Here's the guy who in 1948 ran in the Dixiecrat Party for President of the United States on the platform of let's keep the black folks down. Let's maintain segregation in the United States. This was 6 years before the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education ruling and, nearly 2 decades before the Civil Rights Act of 1967. And Trent Lott, honoring him on his 100th birthday, saying words to the effect of, this country would be a whole lot better if you had been elected president in 48.
Right.
And now he is?
Back.
He is back. He is the number two guy in the Republican Party right now.
That's exactly right.
In the Senate.
He beat out Lamar Alexander, the senator from Tennessee, by one vote. It was 25 to 24.
Was this a secret vote?
It was a secret vote, but they apparently spent most of yesterday evening lobbying. Apparently they were going around offering people ice cream and free dinner and all the different, whatever the different lures are that you can offer people, yeah. They were offering them.
Is anybody in Washington, D.C. taking odds on Joe Lieberman jumping parties?
No, I think most people in Washington tend to think that he's going to stick with the Democrats, actually,
mm-hmm.
even though there were some rumblings about him possibly jumping parties. That would make for a very, very interesting dynamic if he did.
It certainly would, particularly if with regard to the appointment of judges. So do you think that on Sunday on Meet the Press when he was talking about he's not sure that he's not going to go to the Republican Party, that he was just angling for more power from the Democrats?
I think he probably was angling for more power from the Democrats, and I think he was also punishing them.
Yeah.
I think he feels, I mean, if I'm Joe Lieberman, if I put myself in his position, I think he feels they need to be punished. He feels that they abandoned him at a time when he needed them, and they need to be punished now.
Yeah, he feels dissed by them. Bush is off to Vietnam now?
Yes, he's off to Vietnam. He's had his lunch or dinner or whatever meal he had with Vladimir Putin. And by the way, the press were treated quite well. I read the pool report, and they had their own little snacks from the Russians. They were told by a Russian official with a steely face that they were being taken to a special room, which caused them all to they were all terrified.
Yeah.
They got to the special room and discovered it was full of food.
That's nice.
So he's off to Vietnam for the Asian Pacific Economic Summit. And don't ask me what they do there, because that is way above my pay grade.
Well, what they were supposed to talk about is this trade deal that we're going to have with Vietnam, where it's going to be like NAFTA, you know, sort of thing. No more tariffs, so that American corporations can set up factories in hyper low wage Vietnam. But in fact, the Senate did not deliver that treaty to Bush.
And that was a Republican Senate which said, uh-uh.
Right. And I think that is the indication of the growing populist trend in the United States. The Americans saying, hey, enough already. Enough already.
It's really very interesting. So he's going there with nothing, which is going there with nothing. And at the end of a week where he was weakened politically, it's not a comfortable place for him to be.
And Dick Cheney, is he going to be making a comeback, do you see?
Good question. I can't answer that. I saw him yesterday in a meeting with President Bush looking very glum.
Really?
Very glum.
Interesting. Of course, that's sort of his normal state, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, well. Victoria Jones, our senior I Am Not a Racist correspondent with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Victoria, thanks for your report.
Thank you.
Always great talking with you. It's 57 minutes past the hour. It's the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Yeah, the first three words of the Constitution of the United States. We the people of the United States. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
I was lucky enough to find out about Laurel Langmire. Since then, I own 16 investment properties. I have a C Corp, an S Corp. I have 6 LLCs.
Free yourself from the daily grind of your 9-to-5 job.
My experience in the first 4 months, I walked away with almost $300,000.
Laurel Langmire has personally coached hundreds of entrepreneurs into financial freedom.
Laurel and her team blew me away, and I went, I got to work with this lady.
Laurel teaches you how to live in a wealth cycle and stay there. A master of customized one-on-one guidance, Laurel Langmire can place you on the road to financial independence.
Hi, I'm Laurel Langmire. Creating wealth is not as difficult as you may think. If you're ready to turn your financial dreams into reality, then I want you to have my Extreme Money Makeover CD for free.
Call now for this limited time special offer. Get Laurel's Money Makeover CD and her best-selling book, The Millionaire Maker. Both the book and the CD for free. You only pay a small shipping and handling fee. Call 800-508-6820. 800-508-6820.
How is your memory these days? Are you forgetting things like names and numbers, what you just read or heard? Are you misplacing things like keys or glasses or having trouble concentrating? If so, please listen carefully. These mild memory problems are a normal part of aging, but they can grow with time and seriously affect your job, home, or social life unless you act now. Because for the first time, there's an amazing new memory booster called MemoProof, a scientific breakthrough based on 10 years of research that is a safe and effective one-a-day tablet that protects and improves short-term memory, increases concentration, and boosts mental alertness. It's the only product that contains neuropeptides, which are clinically tested to improve memory in just 30 days. Find out how you can get a free 60-day supply of MemoProof and experience the power of MemoProof firsthand. Call 1-800-441-0664, 1-800-441-0664. This offer is limited, so find out how to get your free 60-day supply of MemoProof today. Call 1-800-441-0664, 1-800-441-0664.
Florida business deal. Federal authorities had sought to have the start of Abramoff's sentence postponed so that he could continue to cooperate with their own investigation. As it is, they had to settle for him serving his time in Maryland rather than Pennsylvania. Though this may slow the investigation into lawmakers who allegedly sold their influence to Abramoff and his clients, it is by no means over. Abramoff still awaits sentencing on those charges, and his ongoing cooperation may impact the severity of that sentence. Today, New Jersey Democratic Representative Rush Holt urged Congress to approve a measure sponsored by him that would require a paper trail for electronic voting machines. Holt cited the disputed vote in Florida during the 2000 presidential elections and said that electronic touchscreen voting machines pose a direct threat to the integrity of our voting system. Officials at Holt's office say the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act, which now has 221 bipartisan co-sponsors, will also ban the use of undisclosed software and all wireless and concealed communication devices in voting systems. The U.S. military announced the combat deaths of six servicemen in Iraq, raising the official U.S. death toll to 2,858. All casualties were suffered yesterday. Two were killed by a roadside bomb in Baghdad, and four died fighting in the western Anbar province. Across the country, scattered attacks today have left at least 20 Iraqis dead, including two journalists, while wounding almost 50 others. And Iraqi police report that as many as 70 of those kidnapped yesterday from a Baghdad government office have been released. And in California, former Hewlett-Packard chairwoman Patricia Dunn pleaded not guilty today to four felony identity theft and fraud charges for allegedly instigating the company's ill-fated spying probe into boardroom leaks. You're listening to Air America Radio News. My name is Christabel Insiabuadi.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice. Need an idea for dinner tonight? Rediscover home cooking with Mahatma and Carolina Rice and make old ideas new again. For easy-to-prepare recipe videos, visit them on the web.
Tired of having people repeat and repeat what they are saying? Louder and louder so you can hear? In those embarrassing moments with the new Amplier 2005, so small and powerful you won't believe the difference. Amplier 2005 is so reliable, over 100,000 are in use nationwide. Hear even faint phone conversations with ease. Enjoy your favorite TV show, the theater, sporting events, and family functions without straining to hear. Amplier is fully adjustable, fits both men and women, and is nearly invisible. Results are so effective, they're 100% guaranteed or your money back. Not $79 or $39. Order your Amplier 2005 today for only $19.95. You'll also receive five extra batteries, a cleaning brush, and three custom-fit earpieces absolutely free with your order. Call 1-800-841-7878. Never apologize again for not being able to hear. Order now and get a second Amplier 2005 for only $14.95. Our operators are standing by. Call 1-800-841-7878 today. That's 1-800-841-7878. Order your Amplier and hear even a whisper.
Do your kitchen cabinets look old and outdated? Well, now you can give your kitchen a whole new look with custom cabinet refacing from Sears. Your kitchen can look like new again in about 4 to 6 days without the cost, time, or mess of total remodeling. See for yourself. Call 1-800-300-8065 for a free design consultation. Call right now and ask about our special financing terms. Sears offers over 100 door and drawer combinations to suit any budget and style. And best of all, with Sears, your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call now and get a great new look for your kitchen. Call Sears at 1-800-300-8065. Offer ends December 30th, 2006. Subject to applicant's credit worthiness. License number available on request. This offer is not available in all areas. See associate or ask your consultant for written limited warranty details. custom cabinet refacing from Sears is simple and easy. 1-800-300-8065. Ask about our special financing terms. That's 1-800-300-8065.
Hey, that's a great idea. You could really cash in.
I hope. I've been working on it for years.
Have you got a patent on it?
Not yet. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I need.
Just call Inventec. They can help you protect and market your idea. They've been doing it for inventors for over 10 years. It's easy.
Inventec? That's exactly what I need.
Then call 1-800-319-1818.
Slow down.
That's 1-800-319-1818. And they'll even send you a free inventor's kit and DVD with your confidential submission.
How do you know this?
I called them myself. I have a really good idea of my own, and thanks to Inventec, no one's going to cash in but me. They're going to help me get my invention off the drawing board and into the marketplace.
I really need Inventec. What's that number again?
1-800-319-1818.
One more time?
Call 1-800-319-1818. That's 1-800-319-1818.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. The USO receives no government funding and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people. To find out more, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, man. There is John McCain getting slapped down. This is amazing. John McCain is out there trying to peddle his idea. He's running for president, and he's trying to out-hawk the hawks. Yeah, we need more troops in Vietnam. I mean, Iraq. By the way, as Bush is heading off to Vietnam, it's now Vietnam, right? There's no more North Vietnam and South Vietnam. The official White House website puts up the flags of the three countries that he's visiting. And for Vietnam, they put up the flag of South Vietnam, which ceased to exist in 1975. How to upset the people you're visiting, right? Anyhow, John McCain, who's trying to out-hawk the hawks, lays this thing today before the Armed Services Committee on CENTCOM Commander General John Abizade. John Abizade, the guy who's in charge of the Central Command, he's the guy who's responsible, basically, for running the war. And him and General Casey and General Dempsey. And he says to him, he gives him this whole sales pitch for more troops. Well, you know, a couple of these retired generals would like more troops. What do you think? And I encourage you to check out the video of this over at C-SPAN 2 or on thinkprogress.org. Because after McCain asks the question, his mouth is just hanging open. As Abizade responds, here's McCain with his question.
Did you note that General Zinni, who opposed the invasion, now thinks that we should have more troops? Did you notice that General Batiste, who was opposed to the conduct of this conflict, also says that maybe tens of thousands of additional troops? I don't understand, General. When you have a part of Iraq that's not under our control, and that And yet we still, as Al Anbar province is, which has been, well, I don't know how many American lives have been sacrificed in Al Anbar province, but we still have enough, and we will rely on the ability to train the Iraqi military when the Iraqi army hasn't sent the requested number of battalions into Baghdad.
And at that point, John McCain just stands there with his mouth open and continues to, as General John Abizade, the CENTCOM commander, replies to him.
Senator McCain, I met with every divisional commander, General Casey, the Corps commander, General Dempsey. We all talked together, and I said, in professional opinion, if we were to bring in more American troops now, does it add considerably to our ability to achieve success in Iraq? And they all said no. And the reason is because we want the Iraqis to do more. It's easy for the Iraqis to rely upon us to do this work. I believe that more American forces prevent the Iraqis from doing more, from taking more responsibility for their own future.
Boom. General John Abizaid basically carpet bombing John McCain this morning. John McCain and this Looney Tunes idea. Now, who's doing what in all this? Mike Whitney wrote a very provocative piece over at the Information Clearinghouse. Informationclearinghouse.info. Yeah, unfortunately, when I printed it, I didn't get the URL. He notes, Mike Whitney notes, Cheney is smart. He's real smart. He's smart like a cobra. He's not going down without a fight, and he doesn't give a damn if he takes the whole country with him. Say what? This whole idea that Cheney and Rumsfeld, and is, you know, to which faction is McCain playing here? The Cheney and Rumsfeld are out. Rumsfeld's fired. Cheney can't be fired. He could have some health problems come up and decide to leave, which is what I have been predicting for the better part of 3 years now, that in the last 2 years of the Bush administration, certainly in the last year, that because Cheney, you know, typically it's the vice president who runs for election, re-election as the president, you know, like Al Gore did. Now you go all the way, Hubert Humphrey did out of the Johnson administration. You know, Nixon did out of the Eisenhower administration. I mean, this is something you go all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, who was vice president under John Adams, running for president in 1800, out of the Adams administration. So, anyhow, here's Cheney can't run for president. He has no interest in running for president. Nobody would vote for him. His health isn't probably good enough. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of reasons why this guy could not become president. But he also doesn't want to go to jail. And he also doesn't want to end up disgraced. And so, anyhow, Mike Whitney, writing about this, says Cheney in the box. He says, this is all about Cheney now. Dick Cheney, political survivor and skilled bureaucratic infighter. If anyone thinks he's going to sit around waiting for the Democrats to start sniffing around the Republican corruption cesspool, they're crazy. He knows what's going on. He knows that Bush Sr. and Brzezinski and Baker and the rest of the old order Republicans have muscled in and are taking over. He knows he won't be able to bomb Iran. He won't be able to kill another 650,000 Iraqis. He won't be able to declare martial law at home. And he also knows that John Conyers and the rest of them are going to be nosing around the Halliburton no-bid contracts, going through every sort of detail with a fine-tooth comb and dredging up new scandals on a daily basis. He grasps all of that. He understands the political climate, and he knows that he has only two choices left. Offense or defense? As Mike Whitney writes, either Cheney steps down or he collects his wits, gets his team together, Addington, Abrams, Chertoff, Gonzalez, all the guys who are one step ahead of the hangman. I mean, they're all going to go down if Cheney goes down because they're all complicit in the crimes of this administration, and slaps together one last-ditch effort to establish absolute dictatorial power that will put him forever beyond the reach of the law or any future accountability for his war crimes. So what'll he do next? Asked Mike Whitney. What will Cheney do now that he's been backed into a corner and his power is oozing away like the blood from a sucking chest wound? Will he quietly retire and disappear into a political vapor? Or lock and load and go down with both guns blazing? Here's a clue, says Whitney. Cheney's a dead ender. He won't go peacefully. And then in a second article that he published over at Information Clearinghouse, Mike Whitney talks about, it's called Cheney's Revenge. This is really insightful stuff. I congratulate Mike on some very, very clear writing, and I believe that this is like right to the heart of the matter. He says, Cheney was betrayed. The Justice Department had sent out 80 attorneys to various parts of the country where the Republicans anticipated legal challenges after the elections, but there were no legal challenges. Someone decided there'd be no fight at all. Whitney's taking the position that this wasn't actually a Democratic sweep, that if the Republicans had really wanted to push and really, you know, that they could have rigged this thing. They have the means to have rigged this election and to have won it. But that the old guard Republicans, the old Bush senior Republicans said, no, we're going to let the Democrats take control as a way of slapping down Cheney and Rumsfeld and rescuing the Bush legacy. Keep in mind, Jeb is the guy who was supposed to be president in 2000. He was the guy that they were grooming. George W. was the ne'er-do-well alcoholic son. And the only reason George W. became the candidate for president in 2000 was because Karl Rove had adopted him as his political protege back 10 years earlier, as you know, in the race for governor of Texas. And Rove had decided he was going to be president. And Rove outmaneuvered Jeb and George Sr. But Jeb, they still want to have as president. So you've got the Bush senior, you've got the Bush dynasty basically trying to pull back together their reputation and their future. And what stands in the way? Who stands in the way? Dick Cheney. So Mike Whitney writes, Cheney was betrayed and his plan for one-party rule has been intentionally subverted. Even a seat next to the throne has been jettisoned to make room for Papa Bush's friend and ex-CIA alum, Robert Gates. So what does it all mean? He says, well, as many of the political wags are finally admitting, the adults are stepping in and taking back their government. The establishment, the old school Republicans, the country club plutocrats, they put together a plan to sabotage the Cheney administration and put an end to the Iraq debacle. The scheme first became apparent when Bob Woodward, the establishment's number one scribe, released his book State of Denial. That was followed by the National Intelligence Estimate, the NIE, by Lancet's Iraq Casualty Report, by the Mark Foley Page fiasco, and a steady barrage of ethics and corruption scandals. The Democrats had nothing to do, he says, with the ferocious media blitzkrieg which pummeled the Bush team day in and day out. It was all the handiwork of big money Republicans who had lost their place at the policy table when Cheney and Rummy decided they'd run the whole shebang by themselves. Keep in mind, in the worldview that Mike Whitney is representing here, it's the big money Republicans who control the media in the United States, at least the large corporate media. He says the only way they could be certain of undermining the Secretary of Defense and the Veep was to attack their political base. As Dostoevsky said, one reptile devouring the other. So what does Cheney do next? We'll give you that right after the news, right after this break, 16 minutes past the hour.
Here's an important toll-free number for anyone struggling with more than $15,000 in student loan debt. 1-866-600-2138.
Student Loan Consolidation Center. How can I help you?
Yeah, I just graduated in May, but I'm thousands of dollars in debt. Can you help?
You can reduce your monthly payments by up to 50% with a federally guaranteed consolidation loan. I can tell you if you qualify right away. Student Loan Consolidation Center.
Hi, I've heard that consolidating my son's loans may make good financial sense. How does your program work?
It's easy. I combine your loans into a federally guaranteed loan at an affordable fixed rate that may be tax deductible. There are no fees, and you could lower your monthly payments by up to 50%.
All over America, people are calling the Student Loan Consolidation Center and reducing loan payments by up to 50%. You can too. Call toll-free 1-866-600-2138 now for a free consultation. 1-866-600-2138. Call now.
Like Alice's trip into Wonderland, let's go inside George W.'s head for a moment. Being Bush must be a wonderful existential experience. Fantasy is reality, lies are truth, and history is what you say it is. Take the White House's recent surreal wrestling match with Bush's own tongue. For months leading up to the congressional elections, George had used the phrase "stay the course," both to define his war strategy in Iraq and to impale critics, implying that they did not have the moral fortitude to do the job. But whoa! As the war news grew ever more grim and the public turned against Bush's policy, stay the course was not a politically helpful metaphor, so it was jettisoned. But then, things turned really barmy in the wonderland of Bush world. Rather than just drop the phrase, White House press flack Tony Snow insisted that Bush had, quote, never said it. Then, bizarrely, Bush himself denied his own tongue. Listen, he barked to ABC News, we've never been stay the course. But people had heard him say it. Okay, Snow finally confessed. We've now done a Google search of George's speeches and, quote, to be fair, the president did say stay the course 8 times. So big deal, Snow said. It just proves that Bush barely used the phrase. Only it was a big deal, since the Mad Hatters of Bush World were still lying about it. After Snow's correction, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann ran video clips of George saying, stay the course, not 8 times, but 29. Moreover, the White House's own record of press releases contains 160 uses of stay the course. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Bush wrestled with his tongue, and the tongue won. This would merely be comically embarrassing for the White House, except that it shows that Bush's capacity for self-delusion and public deception knows no bounds.
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing? On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder, millions of jobs are being exported, and now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout, America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman radio program, 21 minutes past the hour. You know, I don't normally like is the wrong word. Well, for lack of a better word. I don't normally like looking into the dark side of these things. I'm not some kind of grand conspiracy theorist, even though I am the co-author of a book that is... David's sitting over here laughing. I'm the co-author of a book that is mentioned in Time Magazine, this week's edition of Time Magazine, Ultimate Sacrifice, a 1,000-page book about the Kennedy assassination. And Gore Vidal wrote an entire chapter about it in his autobiography. I just learned this. I mean, I've got the book on order. But in any case, I've talked with Gore. He's been on this program. You know, we've discussed this stuff. But I'm not, you know, generally a fan of digging into the, you know, psychoanalyzing or looking into the dark side of these things as much as I am a fan of looking at what can be done, what's the upside, where can we go, what's positive. And there's actually some very good news about things that are happening today. One in particular that involves Barack Obama and John Edwards, which I will get to in a few minutes. But first, I want to just wrap up this thing about Dick Cheney, because it leads right into Robert Gates. And there's not a therefore in this. There's a let's keep our eyes open in this, because all this stuff could be wrong. I mean, this could Mike Whitney's take on this. And frankly, I don't disagree with him. Could be just a little too dark. But who we'll see. Anyhow, he says the election simply proves that one should not expect to take the country away from the people who really own it. He says what's interesting in this case is that Cheney was betrayed by Bush. It was Bush who fed rummy to the crocodiles and replaced him with Gates, and it was Bush W. who broke his oath of loyalty to people who put him in office. Cheney doesn't like to be betrayed. In fact, Cheney hates to be betrayed. Loyalty is the only virtue among thieves, and Bush has violated that basic bond. writes Mike Whitney. That probably means big trouble for George W. Bush in the future. Cheney may be down, but he's not out. And unfortunately, nothing has really changed. Cheney hasn't abandoned his plan for global domination. He still has plenty of agents lurking in the shadows who will carry out his agenda. His problem now is how to get back in the game and settle scores with the people who screwed him over. Ironically, his biggest obstacle is George Bush, the man who knifed him in the back and put the brakes on his global crusade. Bush is now under the influence of his father's chief advisors, who are determined to get the troops out of Iraq, forestall any attack on Iran, and probably undermine the powers of the unitary executive. And then Mike Whitney quotes at some length from an article by Dr. Elias Ackley. It's called War in Iran, in which he points out the U.S. and NATO countries have amassed the largest military armada in the Middle East. The U.S. armada consists of Carrier Strike Group 12, led by nuclear power aircraft carrier USS Enterprise, Eisenhower Strike Group, another nuclear-powered aircraft carrier with accompanying military vessels and submarines, Expeditionary Strike Group 5 with multiple attack vessels led by aircraft carrier USS Boxer, the Iwo Jima Expeditionary Strike Group, and the U.S. Coast Guard. Canada has sent its anti-submarine HMCS Ottawa frigate to join the American Armada in the Persian Gulf. On October 1st, the USS Enterprise entered the Suez Canal to join the NATO Armada at the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. And then he goes through this, it's the Italian Navy, 2 Spanish warships, 3 Danish warships, 10 Greek warships, 2 Dutch warships, and French, Belgian, Turkish, and Bulgarian troops, all in South Lebanon. He says this is the largest amassing of military power in the region. Why? In the region. Why? Well, then Larissa Alexandrova over at Raw Story, a person who I have a lot of respect for as an investigative journalist, she asked the question, who really is Robert Gates? Because this feeds right into the question of, what's Cheney going to do? And she asked the question, is Gates Baker's man, like it's being played out in the media? Is he George Bush Sr.'s man, or is he Cheney's man? She writes, sources say that what is at stake here is preserving the Bush family legacy, which is a far greater concern to Bush loyalists than any other factor. She says, but the Bush versus Cheney argument does not stand up to scrutiny. Simply put, when Gates served in the administration of President George H.W. Bush, he had far more in common with Cheney than he did with other members of the administration, including those currently involved in attempts to intervene in Iraq policy. And I would add Iran policy. Gates' alleged involvement in the Iran-Contra scandal. His politicizing of intelligence, as Robert Perry wrote it back in 1981. The CIA said the Soviets don't represent much of a threat. Gates cooked the books and has been outed for that since then. Gates is on the board of directors of a Parker drilling company since 2001. A major client partner of Parker is Halliburton. In 2004, for example, Halliburton landed the Irid Samaria project in Mexico for $175 million, and Parker was brought in, this is the company that Gates is on the board of, to provide the rigs and crews. Serving on the Parker board with Gates is John Gibson, who until 2004 served as chief executive officer of Halliburton Energy Services, and who goes hunting with Vice President Cheney. Another board of the Parker board, member of the Parker board, Robert McKee III, currently the chairman of Aventure, a Shell Halliburton joint venture. Is Gates Cheney's guy? 27 minutes past the hour.
I'm coffee lover Beth Dominic. If you're like me, you probably find the smell of freshly brewed coffee a great help in pulling yourself out of bed on cold winter mornings. At Sacred Grounds Organic Coffee Roasters, we strive to roast our coffees so they taste as good as they smell. All of our coffees are certified organic and are purchased at better than fair trade prices. If you have coffee lovers on your holiday gift list, please consider our selection of gift boxes. Or choose the Coffee Club as a unique and tasty gift, available in 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions. Visit us on the web at sacredgroundscoffee.com or call us at 1-800-425-2532 to learn more about organic coffee gift options. Once again, that's 1-800-425-2532. Happy holidays.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and my show on Headline News Prime has disturbing pictures you have to see to believe. Radical Islamic propaganda, kids being brainwashed, suicide bombers as heroes, it's scary stuff.
and it's time for all of us to realize what's really going on. Radical Islam's Lessons in Hate. Join me, Glenn Beck, for a special hour. Expose the Extremist Agenda. Headline News Prime tonight, 7 and 9 Eastern.
Kids who load up on junk food run a high risk of obesity, and as adults, type 2 diabetes.
Bill is a research scientist at GSK.
Too many kids today don't eat right or get enough exercise. We support a program that encourages schools to replace junk foods with healthier food choices to help prevent type 2 diabetes where we can. The fact is, GSK makes several diabetes medicines, but how great would it be if these kids never had to take them?
GSK, finding a way forward, one healthy child at a time.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. In an important victory for workers and the United Auto Workers Union, a judge has dismissed a National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation lawsuit against the UAW at Freightliner. The lawsuit attacked the card check agreement the UAW used to organize Freightliner, but the judge said in his ruling, quote, participation of unions and employers in card check programs is proper and has never been held to be illegal. End quote. Card check is where workers sign union cards and the employer agrees to recognize the union when a majority of workers have signed up. Federal Judge Graham Mullen said if courts were to find card check agreements illegal, it would have the effect of criminalizing all collective bargaining agreements. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says this ruling means you can't use the courts to overturn democracy. When a majority of workers sign union cards, their right to organize is clear. Freightliner workers in three states have gone union. The New York City Central Labor Council is calling for a cab. Jesse Russell has more.
The 7,000 driver-strong New York Taxi Workers Alliance is under consideration to become part of the New York City Central Labor Council. While not a labor union, the alliance is seeking to join the council to find an ally in pushing for health coverage and disability insurance. The drivers cannot legally organize as a union, as they are considered independent contractors by the current National Labor Relations Board. The Labor Council's executive director, Ed Ott, told the New York Times that the addition of the Taxi Alliance will help strengthen organized labor's ties with immigrant workers' groups. The Labor Council will be voting today.
Striking janitors in Houston are calling today a Chevron Day of Action. Supporters from around the country will be protesting Chevron for not standing by fair wages and health care for the workers who clean their headquarters. The janitors are in week 4 of a strike to force 5 major office building cleaning companies in Houston to come to terms. They're working with the SEIU, who has called on Chevron to apply pressure on the companies that handle the cleaning contract. Comair's Teamster flight attendants have ratified a 4-year contract that the Teamsters say strengthens job security and limits health insurance payments from workers while providing financial assistance to the company. Comair is owned by Delta Airlines, which is in bankruptcy. Connie Slayback, president of Teamsters Local 513 in Kentucky, says this agreement maintains industry-leading wages for Teamsters flight attendants.
Here is today's economic report. Feel like you are entitled to skip out on work? So do 11% of those who took unscheduled absenteeism this year. According to a Harris Interactive poll, the rate of absenteeism in the U.S. is up from 2.3% in 2005 to 2.6% in 2006. The primary reason is personal illness at 35%, followed by 24% for family issues, 18% due to personal needs, 12% for stress, and the remaining 11% because of entitlement mentality.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, president and founder of the Organic One Company. When our ads run on your program, Tom, our phone rings off the hook. So I encourage anyone to advertise, either locally or nationally, on your show, the Tom Hartman Program. Your listeners are clearly what's called in the industry our target audience. By the way, did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed crops there is? You see, the fundamental idea behind organic wine is that making wine with grapes grown without pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizers is clearly better for our planet and, therefore, in all likelihood, better for you, the wine drinker. So for more information and to support ecologically healthy agriculture, please visit our site, www.ecowine.com, or call us. We always love to talk with Tom's listeners. 1-888-ECHO-WINE is our number.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 34 minutes past the hour. Essentially, writes Larissa Alexandrova, as one former high-ranking CIA official tells it, the ideologues have been booted and those remaining are all corporatists. Perhaps the rise of the corporatists? Perhaps. I mean, this is the battle. This is the battle that's shaping up around the 2008 election. Is, are we going to have the populists or the corporatists run this country? The corporatists have been running it since 1980. The populists ran it from 1932 to 1980. The corporatists ran it from 1921 to 32. The populists ran it from 1901 to 1921. We keep going back and forth. The corporatists ran it from arguably around 1870, 1875, 1880, up until 1901. The populists ran it from the election of Abraham Lincoln until the 1880s, early 1880s. The corporatists ran it from the 1830s until the Civil War, or the election of Lincoln. The populists ran it from the founding of this country to the 1830s. It keeps going back and forth. It is what we are seeing here in the history of America, this seesaw back and forth, is the battle between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson at the founding of this country. Alexander Hamilton putting forward a corporatist vision of America and Thomas Jefferson putting forth a populist vision of America. So certainly that's at stake. But then there's the nutcase, then there's the crazies, the ideologues. You ever hear of the Center for Strategic and International Studies? This is a far-right think tank that was funded in large part with money from Richard Mellon Scaife, the guy who organized and paid for the multi-year campaign to bring down Bill and Hillary Clinton. And the CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, has a division called the International Threats Project, on which, and it has a steering committee, and on its steering committee serve Don Rumsfeld and Mr. Gates, the guy who is going to be the new head of the Pentagon. These guys go back to the 1970s and Team B. This is when George Herbert Walker Bush was head of the CIA. Now, there's a really important piece of history here, and I just very quickly share this with you. In 1972, Richard Nixon declared that the age of terror was over. He went over to the Soviet Union with Kissinger, and he came back, and he gave a famous speech and said, Americans no longer need to be afraid. We no longer need to fear the Soviet Union. We no longer need to fear nuclear war. The age of fear is over. We were going to begin taking down our nuclear weapons, building down our nuclear stockpiles. It was the end of the age of fear. Nixon saw this as an extraordinary accomplishment. Now, whether it was because he was a Quaker and there was actually some good in his Grinch heart, or whether it was because he thought it was the politically most potent thing to do, I don't know. But he did it. And the crazies went crazy. The right-wingers, the John Birch Society guys, the John Stormer, the None Dare Call It Treason crowd, they went crazy. How dare he say the age of fear is over? And the group that really went crazy was the military-industrial complex. Wait a minute, we're not going to get any more big contracts? Within 2 years, Nixon was out of office. I'm not saying that there's a relationship between the two. There are some folks who suggest there is. I frankly don't think so. But within 2 years, Nixon was out of office, and Gerry Ford came in. And Gerry Ford's defense secretary, Don Rumsfeld, urged him to hire his protege, Dick Cheney, as Gerry Ford's chief of staff. And these guys came up, and Don Rumsfeld came up, and Cheney came up with this thing called Team B. Actually, you know, Paul Wolfowitz was the head of it. And Team B was this operation that kind of ran out of the White House, more or less. And Rumsfeld came up with also this whole idea of there was this threat. The Soviet Union had this submarine that was so advanced that you couldn't use radar to find it. You couldn't use, sonar to find it. It was so advanced. It made no sound. It was so advanced. It was sonar immune. And therefore, we needed to be very, very afraid. They created this organization called the Committee for the Current Threat. And they promoted this thing in 74. The CIA did an analysis of this and said there's no such thing, no such submarine. And Rumsfeld came out and said, see, I told you so. That's proof that it's there. You can't find it. That proves that it's that advanced. And bang, we were back in the Cold War. And the weapons business was going great guns again. By the way, when the Soviet Union fell, no such submarine. Don Rumsfeld and his claim of weapons of mass destruction had been wrong. But Gates goes back to this whole thing. Rumsfeld and Gates and Bush Sr. and Cheney. And you could argue it's really all about the corporations. It's all about the fact that war is good for business, a certain type of business. Not good for living things, but it's good for business. So anyhow, we're just going to have to see how this all plays out. I just find it fascinating to pose the question. I don't have the answer. But the question, is Gates Cheney's guy? Are these guys planning a war with Iran? I'm certainly seeing and hearing from the right wing. I'm getting these emails constantly from these right-wing think tanks about how Iran is behind all the munitions that are used to blow up our troops in Iraq. Well, we know that's not the case. We know that that's because, you know, most of these weapons are coming from weapons dumps that we failed to secure after we overthrew the government of Iraq. That Iran is behind, you know, the everything that happened in Lebanon. Well, you know, Iran has helped and funded Hezbollah, but is this some kind of strategic thing? Who knows? But the bottom line is that they're trying to gin up an American war against Iran. Why? Because it's good for business? You know, are we that cynical? Again, I don't know. I'm just watching this whole thing play out with sort of morbid fascination and hopes that we can stop it. Which brings me to the good news of the day. Barack Obama today and John Edwards are giving us a speech, speaking at a conference today with current and former Walmart workers and activists to announce a 6-week campaign. It's being coordinated by WakeUpWalmart.com and the UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. It's entitled Hope for the Holidays. And the campaign is going to consist of 30-second TV spots, print ads, and online advertising and postings to sites like YouTube, progressive political sites, and others to reach a wider audience. And it's all about saying to Walmart, you know, we're not going to shop at Walmart if you guys don't start treating your employees well and let the unions in. Now, that's kind of a cool thing. And what I find most interesting about this is that Barack Obama, who in his first year or two in the Senate, you keep in mind his mentor in the Senate was Joe Lieberman. In his first year or two in the Senate was sort of leaning in the corporatist direction. And here he is with John Edwards, who, in my opinion, is the strongest of the populists, the progressive populists out there. John Edwards is a guy that I would vote for president in a heartbeat and work for president. And I have a feeling Barack Obama is, you know, he's wet his finger and lifted it up to the wind, and he goes, I see which way the wind is blowing, which is good. I'm not saying that cynically. That's what we want our politicians to do. We want them to listen to us. And when we the people say, okay, 26 years of corporate rule, it's enough. Reagan has to, Reaganism, 26 years of Reaganism, has turned us from the largest creditor nation in the world to the largest debtor nation in the world. We've gone from being the richest nation in the world to being the poorest nation in the world. We are the most indebted nation in the world. We are even in debt to Mexico. 26 years of Reaganism has turned us from the largest producer of finished goods in the world and the largest exporter of finished goods in the world, the largest manufacturer of finished goods in the world, manufactured products, to the largest importer of finished goods in the world. 26 years of Reaganism has turned us from the largest importer of raw materials. In other words, we used to bring in iron ore and make cars and ship them out. We were the largest importer of raw materials, the largest exporter of finished goods. We are now the largest importer of finished goods and the largest exporter of raw materials. We are now being strip mined by the rest of the world. China and Canada and England and France are now running mines in the United States and taking minerals out of the United States and shipping them to their countries where they are making products in Germany and making cars that they're selling back to us. 26 years of Reaganism has reduced us to third world nation status. It's time for a change. We'll be back with your calls right after this. 45 minutes past the hour.
Maybe you see people listening to their iPods, white earbuds dangling from their ears, and maybe you don't have an iPod yet because you don't see yourself as that type of person. So are you the type that has a CD player or a six-disc changer in your car? Heck with that. Don't limit yourself. Enjoy your entire CD collection anytime, all smushed into a tiny little iPod. Your iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Plug your iPod into your car stereo or home stereo and take it with you when you travel. No matter where you go, your music collection goes with you. iPods are easy to use and easy to import your music from your CD collection. Talk to us about this if you need help. iPod is your personal portable jukebox. Oh, it's a beautiful thing enjoying today's technologies. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics, New England's largest Apple specialist. Come see us in our Small Dog showroom in Waitsfield, Vermont, or on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog, where you'll find high technology for low prices.
The waters off the coast of Oregon had almost no oxygen this summer, and this kind of dead zone is becoming an annual affair. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Unusual wind patterns have given rise to a dead zone in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Oregon every year for the past 5 years. This past summer, there was almost no oxygen in a stretch of water that covered more than 1,000 square miles. Researchers probed the area with underwater cameras, and they saw thousands of dead crabs and virtually no live fish. Francis Chan is a marine ecologist at Oregon State University.
We deployed a robot submarine with a video camera, and in a full day of work, we actually saw no live fish, and all we saw were piles of Dungeness crabs lying on the seafloor.
The dead zone develops when the winds help move currents from the deep sea closer to shore. These waters are rich in nutrients, but they're very low in oxygen. Chan says that combination starts a chain reaction that renders the water unlivable.
As oxygen gets lower and lower, a lot of mobile marine life will actually move out of the way and seek waters that have higher levels of oxygen in it. But for a lot of bottom-dwelling marine life that are either attached to the seafloor or are just not very mobile, such as crabs, they actually succumb to this dead zone.
The dead zone has developed off the Oregon coast during the summer months every year since 2002. This year's event covered the largest expanse of water and suffered the lowest levels of oxygen. Chan says no one knows for sure why this event has become so common, but he says it's definitely associated with a change in wind patterns, and those kinds of changes are predicted to happen as the Earth's climate gets warmer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
What
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language, with no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills? You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you've struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, over 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. This amazing demo includes 28 languages. Learn a language better than you thought possible and faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-339-3166 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills. Call for your free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. The number is 1-800-339-3166. That's 1-800-339-3166.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Open up the dirty window, let the sun illuminate the Wi-Fi. You cannot find, reaching for something in the distance, so close you can almost taste it. Release your inhibitions, feel the rain on your skin.
And welcome back to the Vast Radical Middle Conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. This is pretty amazing. From Reuters, out of London. Apropos, I mean, this just literally just broke. The United States or other countries may one day be forced to consider preemptive action if Iran and North Korea continue to seek nuclear weapons, a senior U.S. government official said on Tuesday. The U.S. and its allies have accused Iran of pursuing nuclear weapons under the guise of a civilian energy program and are pushing for U.N. sanctions, blah-de-blah-de-blah, North Korea conducted a blah-de-blah. Here we go. A U.S. official speaking on condition he was not identified. Now, who would that be? Dick Cheney, maybe? We, the United States, the official told reporters, we, the United States, and others who might be threatened by these developments, will have to look at how to respond, and inevitably, I think people will have to look at the question of preemption. I think it's inevitable that any American administration, not just this administration, but future administrations, will have to look at preemptive strategies. He says he's not going to launch a preemptive strike, quote, tomorrow, end quote. But he says if one of these countries has a missile and a nuclear war, he said, quote, under those circumstances, some people might be inclined to preemption, and not just the United States. Others who might feel threatened in the region might feel more inclined to preemption as a defense. It's a challenge for the international community, he said. Yeah. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. Cynthia in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Cynthia.
Hey, Tom. Thank you for bringing up Team B again. And I have a question on them. Are they now called the Committee on Present Danger?
Yeah.
Okay. There's
for all practical purposes. I mean, it's one and the same, yeah.
Okay. There's a good article in Foreign Policy called Operation Comeback by Joshua Muravich. Chick or something, I can't pronounce it. Mm-hmm. But he's saying that neocons have to make the case to say, okay, we made mistakes and now we have to bomb Iran.
Right, we have to re-terrify the world.
But here's my fear on Gates. And last week, I started writing letters to all the members of the Armed Services Committee. I heard Wesley Clark say it was a good choice. I wrote him a nasty letter. But then I thought, okay, what if I'm being set up and Gates is not nominated, you know, doesn't get the nomination, and or is not confirmed, rather, and then we get somebody worse like a Democratic hawk.
Yeah.
So help me make up my mind on this.
Well, I don't honestly know. I mean, Gates, in my mind, is...
He's horrible.
...is pretty contaminated, yeah. He's pretty damaged goods. But the fact of the matter is that this administration is basically in control of the process. I mean, by and large, there's a kind of a constitutional deference or a historical deference on the part of Congress to the executive branch that, you know, as long as the person can sit up without drooling. Basically, the president gets to have the cabinet he wants, and the Secretary of Defense is part of that cabinet. In fact, back in 1950, in 1950, George Marshall was nominated to be the Secretary of Defense, and he was only 5 years out of the military. There's a law, a federal law, that says you have to be out of the military 10 years before you can be Secretary of Defense. Congress actually passed a law exempting itself from the law, just specifically for the case of George Marshall, so that he could become Secretary of Defense, because, you know, that's who Truman wanted. So, and you know, Marshall was helping rebuild Europe at the time. It seemed like a good choice. So, historically, Congress has deferred to the executive branch, and who's going to be the Secretary of Defense?
Well, I'm confused. I've read that he says we need to put out feelers to negotiate with Iran and Syria. I'm all for that, because we can't win.
Gates is a Rorschach test. He's absolutely a Rorschach test right now. I mean, the hawks are reading Gates as a hawk. The doves are reading Gates as a dove. The pragmatists are reading him as a pragmatist. The corporatists are reading him as a corporatist. The spies are reading him as a spy. or everybody is reading him as something other than that. But I think right now he's just a giant Rorschach test, and we won't know until he becomes Secretary of Defense. But there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be the Secretary of Defense, that he will be confirmed, because all the dirt on him is already out. And nobody's blowing back on it. Nobody's reacting to it. I'm seeing that coming down the road. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling, Cynthia. Brian in Orange County, California. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom, always a pleasure to speak with you. Well, I think I might have some good news for you. I'm not sure if you know this. You mentioned a while back that someone needs to prosecute Ken Blackwell, put him behind bars.
Or at least investigate. Let's start there.
Yeah.
Let's do it right.
Always a good place to start. I don't know if you know, but Democratic candidate Mark Dan just unseated the Republican incumbent attorney general there in this election. And Dan was actually on Bobby Kennedy's show, Ring of Fire, and talking about how one of the first things he wants to do if he was elected was to actively investigate the voter fraud for everything that Ken Blackwell did.
Oh, still my beating heart.
Yes, I thought that would be very good news, and I think that's really important. Also, Ken Blackwell had a bad. I mean, he not only did he get completely squashed for the governor's race, but now we have a new Democratic Secretary of State there in Ohio, Jennifer Brunner, which I think is great, because we don't want to let this whole.
I think change is in the wind, Brian. I think absolutely change is in the wind. It's a great thing, and thanks for calling and pointing it out, Lawrence in Springfield, Oregon. Hey, Lawrence.
Hi, another fugitive from the house, from the paper house. The problem that the neocons have, and Team B in particular, and the corporatist interest, is that they are diametrically opposed to their voting base.
Absolutely. Most Americans don't want war. I mean, that's the bottom line. Lawrence, we've got to wrap this up. We'll have this conversation at some length in a future program. I'd like to, in fact, get back to the whole Team B thing. We could do a history of it maybe tomorrow or the next day. Coming up tomorrow, conservative Terrence Pell and I are going to take opposite ends on the importance of affirmative action. And Lloyd Chapman is here saying the Bush administration is intentionally moving billions of dollars of small business contracts to big corporations. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The American middle class is on its deathbed. Ordinary folks who put in a solid day's work can no longer afford to buy a house, send their kids to college, or even get sick. If you're not a CEO, you're probably screwed. In his latest book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can...